This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run! He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it. Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod looks. Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile into the end zone. Boy, touch to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
And it's hard to, like, go against the eye of a tiger, you know, a team that is will claw and fight to the end. You know, it's hard to beat a team like that. I think we have that. The talent kind of goes out the window. You know, the athletic ability from players goes out the window. You know, you got that big heart. And guys believe and guys want to win.
LeSean Shady McCoy, his explanation of what's going on around here at One Bills Drive from the post game yesterday. Good afternoon. Welcome to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones here until 3 o'clock today with the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts on the day after the big win, the 20-point win over the Oakland Raiders yesterday. What if I told you Friday that I think the Bills are going to win by 20? You would have said, what?
I would have said... I think they're going to win, but not by 20. Which I did say. I think they were. I thought they were going
to
win.
When did you say that? Can we go to the tape? Can we get back to the tape?
We gotta have the ability to pull back the tape so that we can see what we said in the past. We gotta talk to some people around.
We have that ability.
Do we? Well, we gotta talk to the producers about this.
Can you specify when? All right. That you said you thought they'd win. I wasn't sure they'd win.
Yeah, to be honest with you. And I'll tell you this: the first drive when Oakland got the ball. I was like, uh-oh, this is going to be a long day.
Yeah.
Because they drove down the field with ease and scored with ease, you know. And then you had that big call go against the Bills. And I'm like, oh, now the refs are against us as well. This is going to be a long day here in Buffalo.
I think of it less as the refs being against the Bills and more the refs are just kind of incompetent out there bumbling around a little bit. I really do.
Over-officiated.
That was one of the most – the Bills had 11 penalties, which is too many, obviously. But that game was so over-officiated, just stuff
being
called. But whatever.
It makes it not fun to watch. It's like,
oh, yeah.
You know, I'm telling you, he does push-ups before he comes out, Ed Hockley. And he's like, guys, I'm telling you, I got to show my guns.
Yeah, but so he had them covered up.
He did have them covered up, but you can still see him through his shirts a little bit. No, it was, you know, that call was bad. But in the beginning, I thought it was about to get ugly. And then they had a key stop there, and then everything just started to go their way.
It really rolled well for the Bills yesterday as they picked up the win over the Oakland Raiders, 34-14, 20 more points in 13 consecutive home games. That is the longest active streak in franchise history. Donald and I here to talk with you about that game today, and you're welcome to join us. The phone line's open, 803-0550, the number to call. From outside Buffalo, it's a toll-free call, 1-888-550-2550. Or via Twitter at John Murphy Show. But on Twitter, we have our Twitter poll as we recap the game. We want to get you engaged in that a little bit. And your thoughts on yesterday's game on Twitter. The Twitter poll looks like this. What do you think about that Bills victory yesterday? And what were the elements of that Buffalo victory yesterday? What's your biggest takeaway from yesterday's game? You can weigh in on the poll. What's the biggest takeaway from the Bills win over the Raiders? 45% of you say it was controlling Oakland's weapons, both offense and defense. I think that including Khalil Mack on the defensive side of the ball. 32% say the rookie impact on turnovers with Matt Milano, I guess, getting the turnover.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and some of the other rookies. And 20% say the offensive breakout that the Bills had. 3% had something else. What do you think? Ring us up. Let us know what you think. Biggest takeaway from the Bills' win over the Raiders yesterday. And give us a call at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550.
When we go rookie impact, I think, you know, we mean rookie impact and the Matt Milano turnover. Let's just try to phrase it that way.
Okay.
Because you did have a lot of rookies that played well yesterday. You had, obviously, Matt Milano. Tre'Davious White followed Amari Cooper yesterday and played very well against him.
Yeah.
And then you have who else was out there? Zay Jones finally got some passes thrown his way, finally got some catches. Didn't have a big game, but it was good to see him catch some balls down the field a little bit, you know. And then you have Trey Elston, you know, is he a rookie?
First-year player.
Still a young guy, but for him to play the way he played yesterday, I think he had like 11 tackles, something like that. Big hits. I love to see him come up and hit. It scares me up. I'm up in the booth like, ooh, man, this dude is crazy. He plays reckless. Yeah. Yeah. But at the same time, I love to see him out there making plays. It's good to see these young guys out there making plays.
And it's incredible that the takeaways that they're getting, Donald. I mean, they're plus 14, leading the NFL. The takeaways have been ridiculous over the last couple of games. 15 takeaways by the Bills in the last five games. Four wins and one losses in those last five games. And two turnovers, that's all, in those last five games.
Right.
So that's a plus 13 just in the last five games for this Bills team, which is pretty incredible. And the stuff that went on there yesterday, including the hit and the rookie cruising into the end zone.
Mm-hmm.
But just amazing stuff that went on yesterday. And I don't know. Is it sustainable? That would be the question,
that's the
I
biggest
guess, right?
question. And everybody's getting in on it, even the kickers. Even the kickers are getting in, stripping the ball out. I've never seen a kicker, like a clean strip, too, with his left hand. That was a good play. Even though he got it back, it was like, man, that was Hauschka out there on the strip. I don't know if it's sustainable. You know, because you heard Coach McDermott say it yesterday. Somebody else said it yesterday. It comes in bunches. Both of these guys, during the press conferences after the game, they do come in bunches. And then when you get cold, you get cold. And if you remember last year, the Bills, when they went on a four-game run, they were getting turnovers. And then all of a sudden, last year's team wasn't creating turnovers anymore, and they were losing games, you know. So I think that's huge. And that sticks out when you talk about plus 13 in turnovers, 15 turnovers in the last five games or takeaways, and then only two turnovers. I mean, that's huge. Plus 13, that's big. But I think the fact that the offense played well yesterday and the offense played well last week, for me, I think I would go with that in this Twitter poll, just because there will come a time. I hope that they can sustain the turnovers, but there will come a time where you're not going to get as many turnovers, you know, and can your offense score points when you're not creating those turnovers? That's the biggest thing. And the fact that the offense, the running game got going, Tyrod played efficiently, you know, he didn't have a crazy, crazy stat game, but he played as well as you can expect out of Tyrod Taylor yesterday. An efficient game. I think he had a 74 rating. No, he had an over 100 rating, but he had a 74% completion percentage right there. So I think it was an effective game, efficient game by Tyrod. And I think if the offense can continue to play like this, like they played last night or yesterday, then they'll be okay moving forward.
Yeah, and the offense is pretty good. I mean, you put up all those points yesterday, and that's pretty good. But a lot of it generated by the takeaways, by the turnovers. The Bills have won four of their last five, and in that span, they've had 15 takeaways, just two turnovers. That's plus 13 in that span. And you can win a lot of games that way. You really can, and I think they've demonstrated that. Is it sustainable? That's a question that we will address as the week moves along, and it is going to be a short week, clearly, with the Bills getting ready to head to New York to play Thursday night against the New York Jets. But sustainable, we'll see. Give us your thoughts on the game. The lines are open, 803-0550, and toll-free on the phone line. Coming up on the show, I wanted to say, Chris Brown joins us at 1 o'clock, who joins us from BuffaloBills.com. Mike Jannetty from Spot Track will join us coming up at the 2 o'clock hour. The reason, the move of Marcel Darius over the weekend, a big move that we cannot ignore. And Mike Jannetty will talk a little bit about what that trade's all about.
You can't ignore that move at all. You know, you can put that one in with the rest of the moves that have happened this year. But that Marcel Darius trade was huge. I did not think that they would be able to move him off the books. I did not see that coming. You know, if you would have said anybody else on the team, I would have said, you know what, they can move him. But not that contract with Marcel Darius. And they were able to do it. So, you know, good job. I mean, they got, a six-round pick for him. But I think that's just kind of what they had to do to get him, you know, to move him off your books. Great job by them. And the fact that the team came out and played the way it did yesterday without Marcel Darius being out there is an even bigger statement.
Yeah, and Marcel, as we know, has been sort of a limited role player in this defense ever since the season began. Clearly ran afoul of the new regime, including the incident in the preseason when, he was late, I guess.
Yep.
But traded away. The Bills get a conditional draft pick, most likely, a six-rounder, did we say, coming back their way from the Jacksonville Jaguars. We wish Marcel well. Pretty good guy. But clearly they were ready to turn the page here and ready to you know, get him off the roster and ready to move his salary off the roster eventually. There'll be some salary cap implications moving forward. We'll talk with Mike Jannetty of SpotTrack coming up about that. And at 2:30, we'll carry the news conference live with Bills head coach Sean McDermott. He'll address the media at 2:30. The Bills do have a practice day today and a very short week coming up, Donald. You played in some of these short weeks, right, these Thursday weeks?
Yeah, played in these
a lot
Thursday
of strength.
Weeks.
There's no recovery time, right? That's
no,
the biggest issue.
Not at all. I even seen Lorenzo tweet out last night, already getting ready for Thursday night. He was getting a massage last night after the game. You don't have any recovery time. It is a tough, short week. I'm sure this coaching staff was already preparing for the Jets last week, at the same time trying to prepare for the Oakland Raiders. They probably had to double down on those two games. Usually you get like a pretty vanilla playbook for these Thursday night games because you don't have enough time to look at what they do and prepare a game plan and get it out to your team. They'll probably have some sort of a practice tomorrow.
A little bit today, I guess. I'm sure
a little bit walkthrough. Probably a walkthrough tomorrow. They have to use all of these days as recovery days.
Yeah.
And you know? And so it's all going to be mental walkthrough type of days, travel on Wednesday, and then play the game Thursday.
The Bills playing Thursday night, 8:25, in the Meadowlands of New Jersey against the Jets. Rematch with the Jets, and then they do get sort of the mini-bye, which they'll need to recover from this one, I would
think.
Yes,
they will.
All right, so let's get to it. We'll get your phone calls on the air at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550 from outside Buffalo. You can weigh in on our Twitter poll, which deals with the elements of the win and what your takeaway was from the win. And we got a pretty good show coming up. We'll hear from the Buffalo locker room as well as we move forward. But let's take some calls. Let's go to Robert in Oregon. Hello, Robert. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, how's it going, John and Don? How are you guys doing today?
Good. Doing great. Thank you.
Good. I just wanted to talk about the game and a little bit about this upcoming trade deadline that's coming up tomorrow. So the game was awesome. I think the rookies played really well as the team overall. I just feel like the defense is a pack of honey badgers trying to make any opportunity they can. And I wanted to talk about two quarterbacks for you real quick. You had to choose 28-year-old quarterback, two guys, quarterback A, record 10-18, quarterback B, record 15-14. Quarterback A, game-winning drives, 2. Quarterback B, 3, game-winning drives. Completion percentage for A, 59%.
I'm lost.
Who's A? I know who B is, but who's A?
So A is Jim Kelly.
Gotcha.
B is Tyrod Taylor. My point is, after his first 2 years, comparing Jim to Tyrod, Tyrod's numbers are better across the board. I know he's got a different playing style and all that, but I think people need to give him a little bit more time before making this request to put Peterman in every time we have a bad game.
Yeah,
I haven't heard that in a while. I will say this. I think Tyrod plays on a much better team than Kelly had when he first got here in 86, and that team took a couple of years to build up, at least two. Tyrod plays on, a better team, better defense in particular than where the Bills were. But your point is well made. You know, I haven't heard a lot of calls for Tyrod to be benched lately. Have you, Robert?
It seems like every time we hear about anything that's going on with Tyrod Taylor, let's bench him and put in Peterman. If we would have lost today, I think we would have been talking about the same thing. Hmm. But the last question I had, and I'll let it go for you guys, trade deadline's coming up. We looked at what happened with the Astros where they went out and got Justin Verlander after they saw how hard their team is doing. Mm-hmm. All the talented players the Bills have pushed out, do you think there's something they should do before this trade deadline to give these guys that are working so hard a chance to make this a special season?
You know, I could see your point there. Is it something I think they should do? I guess it depends on what it is that you're giving up. You know, they've done a good job of getting draft capital for all of the guys that they've let go on this team, and I truly believe that they don't want to allow that to leave. Now, you know, obviously you still have some positions where you need some depth there. You have some backups that have actually been playing well. But I don't know. Robert, you still on the line?
I believe he's still there.
Yes, I'm still on the line. Yeah.
What would you like to trade for?
I think you need a playmaker of some type. I don't know if it's a receiver or a backup running back to spell Shady, but I think you got to have a difference maker on that offense to really help this team push forward when those turnovers aren't coming and really help us cash in when we do get those turnovers instead of field goals.
You know, I think what you suggest, and I get the logic, Robert, but it seems to me like that would be the exact opposite of the mode they're in. I mean, and first of all, let me say at the outset, I've been wrong a lot. I think we both have about what they're doing, what the intent is. But they've made trades to stockpile draft picks this year, including Darius. And we're going to talk a lot about Darius as the day goes along.
Yeah.
They haven't made any immediate impact moves this year. And I think it would be a change of course if they were to make a trade just because, they're in good position right now with a long way to go, more than half a season. But it would be kind of a change of approach than what we've seen so far. So that would surprise me, but I've been surprised a couple of times during the season by the front office moves. That would surprise me, though, if all of a sudden they made a deal, if they gave up draft pick capital, for example, to add a player now to help them, a playmaking receiver, as you suggest. That would surprise me a lot.
I heard the same question this morning. Now you have a team sitting at 5-2 when everybody thought the team wasn't going to be good. And you were tanking and all that stuff. Well, now you have a team sitting at 5-2. Should you go out and try to, help your roster out, and bring in a playmaker at running back or wide receiver? I heard the same question this morning. And, I think I have to agree with you there. It just would it would surprise me. I wouldn't mind it if they brought in another playmaker, a guy who, was a true deep threat, because that is truly Tyrod's strong, his strength right there in his passing game was a deep threat. If you brought in another guy, I wouldn't mind that at all. But at the same time, Coach McDermott and Brandon Bean have shown that they will not get off of whatever their plan is.
Right.
And they're not going to waver from that at all. This is our plan since we got here, and we're sticking to this plan. I think Coach McDermott obviously has always believed that his team would be good. And I think now sitting at 5-2 is like, wow, okay, we have something going here, but we're still going to stick to our plan, because what message does that send to the rest of your team, the guys who have been here and put in all the hard work and all of that stuff, to bring somebody else in and say, okay, he's our guy now? I just don't know if that's what they want to do. I think they believe in the playmakers that they have, and they're going to stick to what they've been doing to get them here at 5-2.
I think so, but again, I've been surprised a couple of times. Yeah. And certainly they do a great job, this regime, of not leaking potential trades. I mean, nothing gets out, right?
Nothing at all. It's like nighttime, and I get the alert. Like, a matter of fact, I was in the movies watching the movie American Made, and I looked down at my phone like, oh, okay.
Marcel,
yeah.
I mean, the next one, and it's been out there, the reports on Cordy Glenn, and, Cordy Glenn's playing pretty well. I think he played every snap on the offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't rule that out, though, based on what they're doing. I mean, I think they have a clear idea of what the salary structure could be, should be for this roster. I'm talking about Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott. I think they have a clear, defined idea on how they want those salaries to sit on the roster, who the contributors are going to be, who they want to reward with the big contracts. And so I wouldn't rule anything out, even as well as the offensive line played yesterday and as much of a factor that Cordy Glenn was in that.
What?
I wouldn't rule anything out.
As much – I mean, Khalil Mack was – he wasn't even on the field a lot of plays yesterday, and so that offensive line did a good job of neutralizing Khalil Mack and the rest of the guys on that defensive front for Oakland.
Yeah.
But I don't think you can rule anything out.
Right.
With this regime and with this head coach, I don't think you can rule anything out that they feel like they can get either a player or some more draft capital. They might go ahead and go for it. They have Deion Dawkins, who's played now.
Yeah.
And so it's not like, okay, we have this rookie who hasn't played at all. He's played in some games, and they have other guys that they feel like can step in as well. And so I wouldn't rule anything out right now.
Let's take a call here from Rashawn in Buffalo. Hello, Rashawn. You're on the air with us.
Yes. Good afternoon, gentlemen. I called a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of was bashing our rush zone blocking.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But now that I'm thinking about it, maybe that wasn't the problem. Maybe the problem was we didn't have Cordy Glenn in there. So maybe he is the factor of this line being successful. And the second thing I wanted to say is I am tired of the Tyrod bashing. If your quarterback is throwing 300, 400 yards, then that means you have no run game. So you don't want your quarterback to have to throw for a few hundred yards. You want it balanced. And I'll take 165 with a 75% completion rating over 300 yards and a loss any day of the week.
Yeah, it's a really good point that you make. you know, Tyrod sort of breaks the mold for how we typically in this day and age view a successful quarterback play in the NFL. Didn't have a whole lot to offer as far as rushing yardage yesterday. But as far as escapability and making plays with his feet and keeping plays alive, he's doing it as well as anybody right now.
I mean, the play to Andre Holmes yesterday.
Yeah.
The way he
– the touchdown.
You know, yeah, he turned all the way around, scrambled out, ran backwards, and then just bought more and more time and just lobbed it out there to Andre Holmes. And we call that, well, my boy Nate Burleson calls it toe drag swag, you know, because that's what wide receivers are all about, the swag, Murph. I just want you to know that. That was some toe drag swag right there. But it was a good play by Tyrod Taylor to just buy time, and lob that ball out there so Andre Holmes can get to it. And when you hear him talk about it in the press conference, he's like, listen, in practice, I knew he would be, you know, we worked on it in practice. I know he would be going across the back of the end zone. And it worked out for him in the game. Look, Tyrod Taylor is doing things that, you know, most quarterbacks can't do. You know, there are some mobile quarterbacks that can do what he can do. And I know he doesn't throw the ball, you know, he doesn't get the ball out in whatever point, whatever seconds. And that's fine. But he's creating plays out of nothing, really. And I think I wouldn't expect any more than 200, 250 yards, that would be a great game out of Tyrod Taylor. And a couple of touchdowns, because it's just not his game. You know, I think yesterday showed us what who Tyrod Taylor is. I think he played the same way last year in the Miami game. He played the same way last year in the Seattle game when they were like, man, these are good games by Tyrod Taylor. That's how he played yesterday. It wasn't like he threw for 400 yards.
Right. I mean, they seemed, and again, we know this, and it's no secret, last year's failure was on the defensive side of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Tyrod on the offense was very productive last year. We seem to have found in the last couple of weeks here, Donald, the sweet spot for the formula for winning for this team.
Yeah.
Yet effective, not great, and not big numbers, but effective quarterback from Tyrod Taylor. Don't turn the ball over. Get as many takeaways as you can, and they're remarkable in that respect, and play good, solid defense the way they probably wish they would have won a year ago, you know, because they had everything except the defense, which is a big missing piece. But the pieces are in place right now as they approach midseason. Can they hold it together and keep going? We're going to find out, right?
Yeah, we're definitely going to find out. I think one thing that you can – obviously the wins, that's a bright spot, but the real bright spot in this is the young players that are stepping up, the backups that are playing huge roles in these games and creating turnovers and making big plays for this team. Because, you know, here soon you're going to get Charles Clay back, you're going to get a Jordan Poyer back, you know, and so you know you have depth, and you don't have to just say, okay, we don't know who we have, but at least we know we have guys behind our starters. And I think that's good for your team.
The contributions from rookies and first-year guys, immense yesterday. I did a piece on it, a video piece at Bills Focus at BuffaloBills.com. But if you think about it, Tre'Davious White absolutely locking down Amari Cooper.
Yes.
I mean, it was spectacular. I don't think he started out following him all over the field. I think they were playing left and right in the first quarter, but pretty much after that, it was Cooper versus Tre'Davious.
Let's put him on, and he did a great job.
Never
hurt him at all.
Yeah.
Amari Cooper ended up with 48 yards yesterday.
It was sensational. Matt Milano, now in a spot starting role for a couple of weeks with the injury to Humber. Matt Milano comes up with the play of the game and actually rakes out another fumble. And I said this to you in our office earlier today, it seems as if every week Matt Milano takes another step forward.
He gets better and better. And that's a great thing. You know, when Humber comes back, now maybe you have a healthy rotation of linebackers, you know, and it won't just be relying on Humber, you know, and he can come back with his injury and, you know, he'll play, but you know when Matt Milano comes in, you don't have a huge drop-off. This kid has now gotten some playing time. He's made big plays for this team. I love to see when young guys are making plays for teams because, number one, here in the future when you get your starters back who are hurt, you know you have some true depth, and I think it helps. You also can speak to the future of your franchise.
Yeah.
You know, when you have your young draft picks making plays, okay, we know – if certain guys are not here in the future, we have these draft picks that have played a lot in the past, last year, made some big plays for this team. Even if this team, you know, goes on, let's just say they went on to make it to the playoffs, you have young guys that have helped to get to that point, you know. And so the biggest thing is, the last caller was asking a question about a big trade. You know, I just want everybody to remember, you have a head coach and a GM who went to the Super Bowl, had a crazy great season down in Carolina with a bunch of role players starting because their starters were down. You know, they didn't have big names on offense. Aside from Cam Newton, they lost their number one wide receiver. They had Ted Ginn. They had Philly Brown. You know, those guys were starting at wide receiver. And then, you know, on the defense, their defense held it together. So with that formula, that's the formula we're looking at right now for this team. And I don't think they – I think they looked at what they – yeah, they'll look at what they did that year, and they're looking at it from this year's perspective like, you know what? We're doing the same things we did back in 2015, and this formula can carry us all the way.
Another first-year player who contributed significantly yesterday was Trey Elston, getting the start in place of Jordan Poyer. And I'm not going to say it was smooth sailing the entire day for Trey Elston, but, you know, he flying around, trying to make big plays, came up with a kind of the game-clinching interception at the end, and that's valuable experience for him.
Huh? He got clothesline.
At the end there, yeah. Well,
go down, dude.
He should have. At any rate, they're building this depth and winning as they move forward, which is pretty impressive, I think. Very impressive, as a matter of fact. Some of the highlights from the game, some of the calls of the game, the Bills and their opponents yesterday, the Oakland Raiders. We've got Game Rewind presented by Toshiba, the official copier company of the Buffalo Bills. Here are some of the highlights. Bills and the Oakland Raiders, critical game in the AFC, Mark. The Bills trying to start their season 4-0 at home for the first time since 1995. And they give it to Olawale. Cuts to his left, now drives forward, heading into the end zone. He is in. Touchdown, Oakland. Jamaze Olawale, the fifth-year veteran from North Texas, with a one-yard touchdown run. Second and goal from the six. The snap. Taylor looks, has time, now dances away from pressure. Here comes Matt. Tyrod throws into the end zone and is caught in the corner of the end zone. Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo! Andre Holmes, a diving catch, a six-yard touchdown. Carr takes the snap, dumps it off over the middle again. This time the pass is broken up and it is intercepted. Matt Milano on the run at the 25-20, 10-yard line, 5-yard line. Touchdown! 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 Matt Milano! Touchdown, Buffalo! The pass was broken up. It popped into the air, right into the arms of the rookie. Matt Milano scores the touchdown, and the Bills take the lead. Three and out series for the Buffalo offense to start this second half. Colton Schmidt into punt. High into the air. Jalen Richard fields it at his 13. Outside the numbers, right side. Slips, falls. Surrounded by Bills and dropped. There's a flag on the play, and the ball comes out. Loose ball around the 15-yard line. The Bills recover at the Oakland 14-yard line. Mike Tolbert down there to cover up. Snap is down. Hauschka's kick is on the way. It is up, and it is good. Derek Carr cocks his arm, fires down the middle. It is tipped. It is intercepted by Micah Hyde at the 40-yard line. And Micah Hyde, who leads the league in picks, comes up with another one. 44-yard field goal attempt. Snap is good. Kick is on the way. It is up, and it is good. It is good. And it is 20-7 now. The Bills lead Oakland. Second and 20. Tyrod takes the snap. Back to throw. Buys some time. Looks downfield. Fires downfield. Caught by Brandon Tate at the 40-yard line. Spins away from one man. Tate on the run at the 45. Midfield and dragged down at the Raiders' 49-yard line. Taylor looks downfield. Cocks his arm. Fires downfield. He's got Holmes wide open. Makes the catch at the 15-yard line. It's good. Great catch by Andre Holmes, the former Raider. The Bills keep the offense on the field. First play, fourth quarter. Up by 13. Fourth and inches from the one. The snap. Tyrod tries. It goes over the top. They rule it a touchdown. They rule it a touchdown. He broke the plane. Tyrod did. From the four-yard line, Derek Carr waits for the snap. Now he gets it. Looks to his right. Fires short. Caught by Washington, who spins his way into the end zone. Touchdown, Oakland. This crowd is ridiculously loud. Here's the snap. Carr pumps once. Fires. Incomplete. Incomplete. The Bills take over on downs. 3:21 left to play. The snap. And Tyrod hands it off to Shady. He's in the clear. He's going to score. 25-20. 10-5. McCoy wasting time into the end zone. Touchdown. Touchdown, Buffalo. Touchdown, LeSean McCoy. And the game-clinching touchdown comes with 3 minutes, 12 seconds left to play. There you go. Game Rewind presented by Toshiba, the official copier company of the Buffalo Bills. How about that? That was a lot of fun yesterday.
It was fun to see the turnovers. It was fun to see LeSean McCoy with some, you know, break some big runs. Brandon Tate with the big play. And the biggest thing on that play, which I think is the reason why so many people like it, is when you saw the reaction from the team.
Mm-hmm.
It was like house party. It was like everybody was over there just have you ever seen that? You've probably never seen that movie.
Why would you say that I've never seen that movie?
I don't think you've seen that movie. You seen that movie?
No.
Oh, all right.
I have no intention of wasting an hour and a half or 2 hours.
That is a classic. House party? That is a classic movie.
You have a different definition of classic than me. Hey, Bills fans, it's your chance now to vote for the Blue Rock Energy Player of the Week. It is powered by Blue Blue Rock Energy, the official electricity supplier of the Buffalo Bills. Voting is open. It will continue until tomorrow. And the nominees for the Blue Rock Energy Player of the Week, running back LeSean McCoy, linebacker Matt Milano, quarterback Tyrod Taylor, and tight end Logan Thomas. We'll announce the winner here on the show tomorrow. Go to BlueRockEnergy.com/POTW or Blue Rock Energy's Facebook page to learn more and cast your vote. The Blue Rock Energy Player of the Week. We'll have the winner announced for you tomorrow here on the show. Donald and I back with more. We'll take you on a trip around the locker room when we return. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Second and goal from the 6. The snap. Taylor looks, has time, now dances away from pressure. Here comes Matt. Tyrod throws into the end zone and he's caught in the corner of the end zone. Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo! Andre Holmes, a diving catch, a 6-yard touchdown. That's the Hilbert College call of the game. At Hilbert College, the community, the feeling, and the values are different. See Hilbert College. See differently. Go to hilbert.edu/see different. John Murphy, Donald Jones, coming to you from One Bills Drive. No victory Monday here, Donald. No time this week. Bills players are here. They will get on the field, I'm sure, for a little light type stretch and workout later in the day. The only real practice day they have is tomorrow, because Wednesday they'll work out and then head for the New Jersey Meadowlands in the afternoon. These Thursday games, they're tough.
It's tough. Yeah. It's tough on the players. It's tough on everybody involved, but the coaches and the players. The coaches, they don't have enough time to put together a full game plan.
Yeah.
And then the players, because you don't have enough time to recover from the week before, you know? And so it's like, by the time you get usually when you play a game on Sunday, by the time you get to Wednesday, that's kind of the day where you feel good enough to practice again. Monday, you're sore. Tuesday is a true rest day. You come in and you work out. You're still trying to work some of that soreness out. By Wednesday, you feel good enough to play again. But now, you know, Wednesday is like you're traveling, which is also not good on your body. So then you got to play in the game on Thursday. It's just not good.
At least it's only an hour flight. And that's not mistake either, mm-hmm. You know. Typically, when you get to these Thursday games, you'll play a divisional rival or hopefully a little bit closer. But I want to know what your biggest takeaway was from the victory over the Oakland Raiders yesterday. What do you think? That's our Twitter poll. That's what we'd like to discuss with you on the telephone lines at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Your biggest takeaway, it's pretty close balloting right now. 39% of you say controlling Oakland's weapons, biggest thing. 33% of you say the impact of rookies and first-year players. That's what you took away from that game. 22% of you say the offensive breakout, 34 points on the scoreboard, although 7 came by a defense. 6% have something else in mind. Give us a call, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550 or via Twitter. Let's go to Jamar in Buffalo. Hello, Jamar. Welcome. You're on the air with us. Jamar, you got to turn that radio down. Hello. Really? Is that it, Jamar? Let's go to a really? He waited. I think he waited a half hour.
And that's really? I mean, he probably put the phone down.
Yeah, but then he hung up on me. I didn't hang up on him.
Oh, really?
No, I don't hang up. Charlie in Buffalo. Hello, Charlie.
Hello, John. Don, how you doing this afternoon?
Good, good.
I'd like to say you make a remark. I got to salute the Bills. They beat a very good football team yesterday, and they got to be in contention for either to win the division this year or be a possible wild card possibility, as long as they don't get any major injuries to that team. And I'd like to say something about the Oakland Raiders organization. They really needed to win that game yesterday to keep their playoff hopes alive. And if they don't make the playoffs this year or have a losing record, they got to go down in the AFC as probably the most disappointing team in football. And that's all I got to say this year, guys. And have a good afternoon. Have a nice Halloween tomorrow.
Thank you.
Thank you, Charlie. I will say, you know, it's still a lot of football left to be played.
We're not even in midseason yet.
We're not even at midseason yet. And, you know, for those of you who have forgotten, when I was here in 2011, we went 5-2. And then you can go back and look at the record from that year. We lost a lot. I think we lost like 7 straight games after that, you know. So there's a lot of football left to be played. The way this team right now is playing, hopefully they can sustain that. The crazy thing is they've kind of won. It seems like they've won games in all the same way, creating turnovers and turnovers. But they have won games in different ways. Yesterday and last week, the offense finally is starting to come on. And that's a good sign
for
this team.
The run game in particular.
Especially the run game. That is a very good sign for this team. We'll see if now against the Jets, the last time they played, they ran the ball well again, you know, as well. So we'll see if they can do that Thursday night. But there's a lot of football left to be played. And we just got to still kind of chill and let's see how this thing plays out.
A couple of things, and I think it's worth mentioning, and this is not, you know, we were right, look at us, but we talked about this, Donald, about how when they got past Cincinnati, they were going to play a string of games against teams where their opponents, were not quite as tough. And we're right in the thick of that now. Tampa Bay, Oakland, the Jets, even New Orleans coming up a couple of weeks away. These are not the top-ranked defenses in the league. And earlier on, they were some of the top-ranked defenses in the league. And so that makes a difference. And the run game has come around with the adjustments they made during the bye week. And if you look at the standings, and you know, the call, I understand the exuberance on the part of fans, and fans are excited, but there is a long way to go. 9 games left to go. They're in good shape as they approach the midway point of the season. They are the 5th seed in the playoff race in the AFC. And they really don't get into the meat of their very own division, at least for another couple of weeks. Now, they'll play the Jets this week, but you really got to wait until December where they really start to, you know, December 3rd, I think, is the date of the Patriots game. And that's when the season will be decided. But hanging in as long as they can with that 5-2 record on pace for, you know, double-digit wins, at least as it stands right now, that's good. But, again, they're the 5th seed, which is where they were a week ago.
So a couple of things there. Number one, this team is, what, 4-0 at home?
Yep.
That's huge. And Coach McDermott has talked about it. The players have talked about it. You defend your own turf. And they're 4-0 at home. And, you know, this week you have a divisional opponent on the road, primetime game. You need to win that game. It's a divisional opponent. You need to stay up in your division. And if you can win that one, then you have, what, 10 days before you play the Saints.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have some extra time, number one, to relax. Number two, possibly get some hurt guys back. Number three, you have extra time to really look at the Saints because the Saints are hot right now as well, you know, and so you have extra time to study them, create some things for them, and they'll be coming here to Buffalo. So that's another game that you need to win at home. And if you can win both of these games, and now you're looking at 7-2, you know, going out to L.A. to play the Chargers, you know, you're doing something well. All I want to see, some meaningful games once we get into that real meat of the division. Some meaningful games in late November and December. That's really what I want to see. I want to see this stadium, New Era Field, lit in December.
You don't have to scratch your head and think too hard about what's gone well here. And they've won 4 of their last 5. It is the turnover ratio. It is the takeaways.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about it. 15 takeaways over the last 5 games. That's an average of 3 takeaways per game. And 2 turnovers in that same time frame. So they're plus 13 over the last 5 games, plus 14 on the season. They lead the NFL in turnover differential.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're taking the ball away 3 times, you're doing a good job with that. And by the way, this is not an accident. And it's difficult to sustain that, but it's not as if they're just lucky, Donald. And the one that got me, I mean, there's tip passes that turned into interceptions. We saw that, you know, against Cincinnati and a couple of other games. But after, you know, Milano scores, but the turnover after that, Mike Tolbert's fumble recovery, that ball was raked out by Matt Milano.
Yeah.
They have a turnover takeaway mentality on that defense and on special teams. They're not just sitting back playing their zone, hoping for a tip pass that they can camp underneath and pick. They are out there actively trying to get takeaways, and it has worked. Now, will that sustain itself at this pace, a 15-2 margin over the last 5 games, takeaways versus turnovers? Boy, that'd be awfully
hard to do.
Very hard to do. But for the you know, in the interim, it's been huge. It's been absolutely huge.
I don't know what – we should have our producers try to look up the record for turnovers in a year by a team, or takeaways in a year by a team. But it's hard to do when you're talking about, you know, what, plus 13 in turnovers?
Plus 14.
Plus 14 in turnovers. It's hard to do when you're – for the rest of the season, you know. And like I said, there will come a time where you won't create turnovers in a game. Now, how do you win that game? You know, does your offense truly come alive? Can your offense put points on the board? Because here's the thing. We're talking about all of these turnovers, and it's great to get the ball back and get something from these turnovers. But the one thing that I continue to talk about is they still – yesterday, you know, they took the one all the way to the house, Matt Milano.
Mm-hmm.
But the other 2 turnovers, you know, they still – didn't score touchdowns off
of
those. Yeah, 2 field goals. You got 6 points out of those 2. And so, you know, you need to score touchdowns off of these turnovers. And so it's good to take the ball away. You keep the other team from scoring, but you need to score points off of that. So, you know, there's still some things to be worked on in this team, I'm sure. The players, the coach, He's going to say, you know what, there's still some things that we can work on. We can still score touchdowns off these turnovers. They need to be better at that. But it's hard to create all these turnovers for the entire season. We'll see if they can keep this up, though. It'd be fun to watch if they do.
They were talking about it in the locker room yesterday, several players, and we made a trip around the locker room to hear what Bills players were saying. Time for Around the Locker Room, presented by NOCO, at work, at home, and on the go. Quarterback Tyrod Taylor, the Bills are unbeaten at home.
I don't think it's definitely an easy place to come in and play. Our fans do a great job of creating a hostile environment. The weather isn't always what opposing teams want it to be, but it's stuff that we practice in and day out. So we embrace it, and of course we want to defend it, and that's something that we preach throughout the week. And just going into the season, home games are definitely important to us, and we've shown that throughout this season thus far.
Running back LeSean McCoy, the Bills' rushing game has hit its stride.
Since the bye, we've been sprinkling different schemes, different runs, you know, stuff that we've been successful with in the past and this year also. And the guys up front, I mean, we talked about just letting them dominate the line of scrimmage, you know, giving me some one-on-one opportunities, giving me some lanes, and they did that today. They blocked well in the pass game, and they blocked extremely well in the running game.
Wide receiver Zay Jones, everything's clicking on the offensive side of the ball.
You know, Tyrod's the that great play caller back there, and just putting us all in the best position to make plays with the checks and the direction in which we're running it. And we have one of the best offensive linemen in the game that are up front moving that pile, and then arguably some of the best running backs. So, I mean, it's a little bit unfair. Really, really excited and proud and honored to play with these group of guys.
Safety Micah Hyde. The Bills have 12 takeaways in the last five games.
They come in bunches, man. They come in bunches. I've been on teams where it's like a drought. You know, it's you're struggling to get a turnover, struggling. And on this team, you know, we're just, you know, the front seven is getting to the quarterback. The back, guys in the back are just, the ball's in the air. It's just go get it. It's that go get it mentality. And like I said, man, I'm happy with these guys. It's awesome.
Linebacker Matt Milano on his fumble recovery for a touchdown.
Defender made a hell of a play, made a big stick. Ball was wet. It came out and made a good play.
You seemed to have no hesitation. You knew exactly what to do.
Yeah, it's just like I've been saying all day today. It just comes back to practice. We practice it so much that it's just a habit at this point.
Defensive tackle Kyle Williams. How do first-year players step in and make so many plays?
I think preparation, you know, guys leading them, helping them along in the game plan, you know, trying to get them prepared to play. And it's a testament to those guys, you know, our coaching staff, and bringing in guys that you know, are tough guys that compete and know how to play the game.
Cornerback Leonard Johnson, the Bills shut down the Raiders' offensive weapons.
These guys are electrifying the offense, and for us to come out and rush and cover the way we did today, you know, was it was something special. You know, we were expecting big plays all day. Just watching them on film, the vertical passing game, you know, was kind of, you know, really stood out. You know, and then they hit one, maybe a couple on us, but other than that, I mean, we were able to keep the ball in front of us, you know, throughout the game.
That is Around the Locker Room, presented by NOCO, at work, at home, and on the go. A couple of tweets, Donald, that I wanted to mention, both from VM Rose 716. I know they buried Oakland on the shady run, but I've never seen a team just pack it in. Seems like the Bills took the life completely out of Oakland, and they threw in the towel. I agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
The McCoy touchdown run, was it 48 yards? I mean, Oakland was totally disinterested. Guys just kind of like, whatever. I mean, I lost a lot of respect for the. I lost a lot of regard for the Raiders as a, you know, a serious. Look, they may make the playoffs, but as a serious playoff contender, just by the way they approached that game, by the way they played in that game, and by the way, you know, they basically at the end, McCoy ran through them for 48 yards and a touchdown. I lost a lot of regard for their chances. I don't know what the deal is there.
They were like, man, it's cold. We're getting spanked right now.
We're going to Florida tonight.
Tonight we're going to Sarasota. Let's just get up out of here and move on to our next opponent. That is what it looked like. They had packed it in by that point. And then you had, obviously, Bruce Irving with the penalty at the end, which was like, come on, man. I was shocked they even threw the flag on that one. But anyway, that team has so much talent, and I think this is what – when you talk about changing a culture, and this is what Coach McDermott has talked about since he's gotten here, you know, you got to have – that celebration was fun. You got to have talent, on your team. But the Oakland Raiders have shown that they've compiled a team full of talent. They have some true, talented guys on that team. But do you have all the right mentality on that team? You know, that's the biggest question. Do you have the mentality, guys that can come back from down? Last year they did it. This year they haven't really been able to do that, you know. And when you're – everything is stacked against you, when you're in a opponent's stadium, it's cold, the fans are going crazy – do you have the right mentality to come back from down when a team has just been whipping up on you all day? And I don't know if that team has it. They have talent, but I don't know if they have that mental makeup to get that done. And I think that's what Coach McDermott is trying to build here, a team that has some talent on the team but just truly believes and always will believe and has that mental toughness to always get it done.
I mean, the Raiders were Super Bowl contenders in many people's minds going into the year. They're 3-5 now. They're 3-4 in the AFC. There's a long way to go. I mean, they're finished. They're at the halfway point of their season. But, you know, they just haven't put it together yet. And the clock's ticking, I think, on the Oakland Raiders.
The clock is ticking. I mean, obviously there's a big game in that division tonight, the Kansas City-Denver game.
Yeah.
But they need to start winning some games. They truly do, or they won't be in anything. They won't be in a wild card. They won't be anything. The clock is already ticked on them. They need to get it going.
All right, we'll break. We're back with more in a moment, including your phone calls on yesterday's game and some of the takeaways you got from the Bills' victory over the Raiders. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Fourth and inches from the one, the snap. Tyrod tries, it goes over the top. The ball pops out, McCoy comes up with it. And the Raiders, let's see, what's the call? They rule it a touchdown. They rule it a touchdown. He broke the plane, Tyrod did. He took a hard shot on a quick snap as he tried to dive over the top of the pile.
Tyrod Taylor with the one-yard touchdown run from the Hunt Real Estate Red Zone. Visit huntrealestate.com to score on all of your real estate needs. Interesting call, gutsy call. It was only, 6 inches, Donald? But if that goes against them, the game looks a little bit different than a 13-point lead with all of the fourth quarter essentially left to play. The Raiders had demonstrated a couple of times that they could move the ball, and it would look different had they not succeeded. And I know it was 4 to 6 inches, but big.
You know, I'll say this. Number one, Navarro Bowman threw Tyrod out of the club there. If you go back and watch the play, he did throw him out of the club. Hey, get out of here, boy. That's kind of how he threw him out of the club. But that was a very gutsy call because you're right. If they didn't get that and, you know, Oakland Raiders get the ball back, as you remember and you think back to the game, the Raiders in the fourth quarter, they drove down the field and scored with ease, really.
Yeah.
That would have been a totally different game than it ended up, because you wouldn't have had the Raiders now packing it in because they're like, we can come back in this game, you know. So that was a gutsy call on fourth down to go for it. 6 inches, I get that. But if you didn't get that one, whew. That'd have been tough. Is, you know, that offense is so good. The quarterback is truly a very good quarterback. They can score points with ease.
Here's a call from Justin in Connecticut. Go ahead, Justin. Welcome.
Hey, John and Don. How are you doing today?
Great. Thank you.
Hey, first time listener, long time caller. I just wanted to comment about.
Did he say first time listener, long time caller?
When the sideline erupted and went crazy, and then the week before that, the Tywan Jones. It seems like a lot of these second and short, third string guys are coming in and making huge plays. And it just feels like the team is at the point right now where they can all count on each other, rely on each other, and that the morale and the spirit of the team is really, really good. And I'm going to hang up and listen to you guys talk.
Okay, yeah. I mean, there's definitely there's a buzz on that roster, Donald. And they do need contributions down the roster, and they're getting contributions from guys down the roster. A week ago, you're right, it was Tywan Jones and Deontay Thompson, just to the name to the roster. Yesterday, you had a bunch of first-year guys, Trey Elston, pressed into play. We talked, about some of these guys. Matt Milano, just his third NFL start. These are big contributions from guys who haven't played much.
Yeah, you had Deontay last week. You had Nick O'Leary. You had Logan Thomas. Like, all of these guys made plays last week. And this week you had a different group of guys that were making plays. I'm telling you, it's a good thing for the team. It's a good thing for your organization, for your franchise, the future. But for the team this year, It's a good thing for if I'm a guy who and I'm a starter and I'm injured and I'm on the sideline, of course I want to be in there. But if my backup is in there making plays, you know, it's kind of twofold on that one because you're like, uh-oh, like he's making plays. I'm happy for him. He's making plays, but he might take my job. But that's good. It's always going to be competition. These guys are in there making plays. Everybody is happy to see these young guys making plays, and it's just good for their growth as individual players.
There's a call from Tim in Buffalo. Hello, Tim. Welcome.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Yeah, thanks for taking the call. I just wanted to commend and salute McDermott and his staff and Leslie Frazier because they brought a mentality to Buffalo, and you kind of stole my thunder, John, when you mentioned how the Bills are you know, not just relying on turnovers but takeaways, like what Trey White did against the Buccaneers and what Milano did on the special teams play. The Bills not only took the ball, they really began to snatch the Raiders' heart, and it demoralized the Raiders. And I just looked at this team objectively. The Buffalo Bills under Rex Ryan, in my opinion, were more talented, but they were flawed. Now, under McDermott, this team may not have the same talent, but they're more together. I'm not sure if you guys were probably at the stadium. You didn't catch CBS, their post-game show. They showed a very simple play on 2nd and 20, how Brandon Tate caught a pass and made a few people miss and picked up a first down. And when he hit the sideline, the players were all over him as if it was a game-winning play. Earlier, they went to Zay Jones, and when he caught a pass, a routine pass, but the players were all over him because this was a guy who struggled with his confidence, if you will. Not with talent, but with his confidence. And the togetherness that McDermott and Leslie Frazier are preaching is translating to the field because the talent level is not there. You no more Sammy Watkins, no more Robert Woods, no more Goodwin. The talent level is not there, but the togetherness is. And it's amazing how much of a difference that has made and how it's translated to success and trust. You know, because Rex Ryan wanted the bully. Once a bully gets hit in the mouth, you know he doesn't want to fight anymore. And when the Raiders came out and hit the Bills in the mouth, they took that punch. And they took the Raiders' punch, and they responded accordingly. Lastly, the issue with Tyrod Taylor, people keep talking about Tyrod Taylor, well, the nation seems to have more respect for Tyrod than Bills Nation. There's so many things that Tyrod does that does not show up on the stat sheet as far as keeping plays alive, as far as extending plays. And when Roethlisberger does it, he gets saluted. But when Taylor does it, he has no discipline. He has no pocket presence. And I think that's just unfair. I mean, a lot of teams would clamor to have a player like Tyrod Taylor who takes care of the ball, who will extend and get first down, and avoid sacks. So I just like the direction we're headed, and I salute McDermott and Leslie Frazier for bringing poise and bringing some discipline to this team.
Okay, yeah, there's a lot going on there, but I think you're right about most of that, as a matter of fact, Tim. And, you know, I think the people are beginning to reassess. I know exactly what you mean about the regard for Tyrod Taylor seems and has seemed to be higher outside of Buffalo than in Buffalo. He is an unconventional quarterback. He has a unique skill set. He is flawed in some ways. But I think you're seeing now how the Tyrod formula, good defense, strong running game, and not turning the ball over, I think you're seeing now over this last month or so that it can work and you can win and maybe win in a big way following that formula. What do you think?
And I think, to be honest with you, yeah, you brought in a guy, Deontay Thompson, who he's not really – well, he is familiar with Tyrod. He hasn't been here, but he's familiar with Tyrod. You have Jordan Matthews back out there on the field. You have Zay Jones back out there on the field. You don't have Charles Clay, but you have Shady, Nick O'Leary, Logan Thomas. All of these guys have been on the field since the spring, you know. And so we've been talking about this for the last year and a half almost. You know, Tyrod last year didn't have any guys that he was used to having out there on the field, and that's what he has this year. And I think that's what you're starting to see now. You're starting to see him comfortable with the guys that he has on the field. And so he's not as reluctant to pull the trigger. Now, we know that's been his issue, is not pulling the trigger fast. But in this game, and Kelso talked about it on the broadcast, he was decisive. He was getting the ball out of his hands, into the hands of his playmakers and letting them run. And I think that has a lot to do with he has the guys on the field that he's been playing with since the spring.
And I think it's important to note, too, as we get ready to go to break, that the time for making decisions on Tyrod's long-term future here, we're not there yet. Mm-hmm. And people will talk about it all they want, and they can. And I'm not saying you can't talk about it, but I don't even think anything's been decided about Tyrod's future yet, and I don't even think they're looking at that yet. Do they need to draft a quarterback next April? Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
But I think we're kind of here, I believe, in the decision-making suites here at One Bills Drive. They are open-minded about what Tyrod's doing, what he can do, and where this season might go.
Kind of letting this thing play out. They're 5-2 right now, so they're just trying to win football games every week and try to get this team into the playoffs. Every week, just win a football game, win a football game. However we have to do it, we can go back and evaluate the season and evaluate Tyrod like we will evaluate everybody at the end of this thing.
All right, we're just getting started on this thing. We're 1 hour in, 2 hours to go. And Chris Brown, Bills Insider at BuffaloBills.com, standing by to join us in studio to talk more about what went on here over the weekend. You can give us a call. The lines are going to be open at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. We are live at One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
The update comes from One Bills Drive. Bills players assembling here. They will have a light workout later in the day. They've got a short week after yesterday's win, their 34-14 win over the Oakland Raiders. Light workout today, practice tomorrow, and then a workout Wednesday before they leave for New York and the rematch with the New York Jets. They beat the Jets on opening day by a score of 21-12 here in Orchard Park. This week's game, Thursday night on the NFL Network. And it's an 8:25 kickoff for the Bills and the New York Jets. Buffalo remaining in the fifth playoff seed in the AFC after yesterday's win. Chicago Bears tight end Zach Miller underwent emergency surgery last night in an effort to save his injured left leg. According to ESPN, the surgery performed in New Orleans after the Bears lost to the Saints trying to repair a damaged artery in his leg. He dislocated his knee in the third quarter of Sunday's game. Sources said it's considered more significant than a regular dislocation, which is a serious injury. Vascular surgeons called in to repair his leg. Indianapolis Colts quarterback Andrew Luck is looking for more opinions to determine why his surgically repaired shoulder is not progressing as expected. Luck had what the Colts believe was a mild setback a couple of weeks ago when he experienced soreness in his throwing shoulder after he was cleared to practice. Luck's recovery from surgery to repair a torn labrum, which was the surgery back on January 15th, has gone much longer than they anticipated. Monday Night Football, the end of the NFL weekend coming up tonight. It's an important game in the AFC West with the 5-2 Kansas City Chiefs at home against Denver. Kickoff is 8:30 at Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City. And the Houston Astros are one win away from their first World Series title. Game 6 is coming up tomorrow night at 7:30, and they'll put Justin Verlander on the mound. The Astros have a day off to recuperate from last night's epic Game 5 win over the Dodgers in Houston, in which they rallied from deficits of 4-0, 7-4, and 8-7, and then blew a 12-9 lead in the ninth inning, finally winning 13-12 in the 10th inning on a walk-off single by Alex Bregman. Game 6 of the World Series tomorrow night at 7:30. It is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy, Donald Jones, and joining us in studio, Bills Insider from BuffaloBills.com, Chris Brown. Hi, Chris.
How are we doing?
Good. Playing with your phone. You're like Adam Schefter over there, right? You're getting late-breaking
details.
Just
checking a couple of things here.
Grocery list from Tracy, what do you got coming in there?
Definitely not the grocery list.
Good to be with you, Chris. I want you to take a look at our Twitter poll and tell us what you think. We like to keep it general on Mondays typically. And after the win over the Oakland Raiders yesterday, we're asking folks the biggest takeaway that people have after yesterday's victory over the New York Jets. Chris, what do you think? What do you take away from that game? Our poll says 39% say the way the Bills controlled Oakland's weapons, and I want to make sure we know that it includes Khalil Mack, which I think was a huge factor. 33% say the impact of rookies and the turnovers the rookies got. 22% say the breakout for the offense, putting up all those points, 34 points, or 27 of the 34. 5% say something else. Chris, what do you say? Do you want to choose any one of those?
I'm back in the minority again. I'm going with other.
Other?
Yeah.
Do you care to elaborate?
Sure. Happy to do so. We have time, right?
We do have some time.
Yeah. I would say that the other thing for me is the collective confidence that this team is now playing with. So it probably covers all three of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Why are the rookies making an impact? They feel prepared. They don't feel like there's any surprises that are going to come their way. They can play fast and let their athletic ability take over. They make an impact. Breakout on offense. I think the team is finally, that unit is finally starting to gel. And we talked about this in previous weeks. When you have a new scheme coming in, you have a couple of new pieces, maybe some guys are out due to injury. It takes a little bit longer for all of that to coalesce and get results. And I think talking to Eric Wood, as you did in the locker room yesterday afterwards, he kind of said, you know, we finally kind of feel like we're gaining momentum as a unit and executing on a consistent basis. That happens once you feel confident in one another that, hey, you know what, we're kind of in sync now. Let's go. And so I think collective confidence on this roster, you know, from top to bottom, coaches and players, is what's catering to the playmaking ability we're seeing on a consistent basis now week to week, because we're going on two games now. We'll see what happens on Thursday, which is going to be, I think, a taller task than some might think, not only because it's a short week, but because the Jets, even though they're not winning, playing pretty damn hard football out there.
I want to circle back to something you said, and I did have a brief conversation with Eric Wood yesterday, and I asked him about what's working in the running game. And you know, I think as you look back, and it's, you always have more perspective when you look back a little bit, but you would figure there'd be a break-in period, right, for this offense. And
right.
Let you listen to what Eric Wood had to say when I asked him about how the running game has gone so well the last couple of weeks, and maybe the fact that it's understandable that it took a little while.
Probably a combination of a lot of things, but you know, I think how multiple we've been mixing the outside zone with the inside zone, with the power schemes, with some other game plan specific stuff. It's tough to prepare for. It's tough to play against.
Looking back, it probably makes sense that there might be a little break in period, right, for brand new offense and new coaching.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I think it was a little bit of us learning each other. You know, we're trying to learn the new schemes. They were learning what we were good at, and hopefully we can keep growing.
It got to be tough to defend, I would think, Donald, right? I mean, the way they run the football especially.
First of all, his hair looked a lot better in that video. Like he put some
fresh out of the shower.
Yeah, you know, we've seen him look crazy.
Got the conditioner in there,
right?
So he's all
so
set.
He was still good. But, yeah, I mean, it took them a while. It took the coaches to learn and understand what they wanted to do, number one, with the offensive line. You know, I mean, we talked about that whole Vlad Dukas – John Miller thing. I think that's kind of put to bed now. I think that's put to rest. I think
Miller's been inactive two straight weeks.
Exactly. I think Vlad Dukas has taken over that spot. Cordy played very well. You know, so now
again.
I think you have again, right. So now I think you have your five offensive linemen and they're working together. And like you said, they've been running a combination of some power inside and outside zone. And it's hard for a team to prepare for that. Especially if you have a running back who you never know where he's going to end up anyway.
Right. And a quarterback who can run too. That's
right.
An important part of what they
exactly.
do.
Exactly.
No question. And even though Tyrod didn't gain a lot in terms of yardage yesterday running with the football, I think he had six carries for a yard, just the way he's able to buy time, extend plays, the Andre Holmes touchdown play is a perfect example. He not only steps up in the pocket because the upfield rush is coming, he throws it in reverse, backs out of the pocket, spins out again, and then finds, you know, Andre in the back left corner of the end zone. I mean, that's there's probably five quarterbacks that can do it as consistently as he can. Russell Wilson's one. Deshaun Watson's probably another. Mm-hmm. You know, and you could probably come up with three more guys that can do that on a consistent basis in tight spaces. There were also a couple of times in tight spaces where he stayed in there and made a couple of throws yesterday.
Took hits.
Took a couple of hits. You know, and it's not going to look pretty on paper. Because at the end of the day, he throws for 165 yards.
Right, right.
But he has a high completion percentage. He's giving you positive plays. Maybe they're only 4 to 6 yards, but that's keeping you, for the most part, ahead of the sticks. Mm-hmm. When the Bills got behind the sticks yesterday, it was due to penalties more than taking negative plays through the offense's own inefficiency. And some of those flags, again... We don't need to get into a discussion there, but I think we all know the crew that was working the game yesterday.
Here's a call from Tom in Buffalo. Hello, Tom. Welcome.
Hey, guys. Afternoon.
Hi.
I think it was controlling of the offensive weapons, but it was a collaborative effort of the next man up and the rookies stepping up and having a great year between Milano and White. But my question is, I heard Seattle was shopping for an offensive starting left tackle. And with Cordy Glenn and his injuries and his salary, couldn't we trade him? They're putting Jimmy Graham up for him. And if we bring Jimmy Graham in, would he be a good fit with the Bills? Because, I mean, even Clay, he could be expendable if we got Jimmy Graham. And Clay's got a lot of injuries.
I don't know why you'd want to move Charles Clay along, by the way. I think he's a pretty talented player.
Jimmy Graham has had his injuries as well out there in Seattle.
Yeah, he's 30 years old. He's not a spring chicken.
Which is not to say, look, the one thing I learned, relearned Friday night, was that be on your toes. These guys will deal.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't rule anything out, Chris. I don't know if Jimmy Graham is the answer. It seems to me, well, the way these guys are working, they probably get a draft pick in exchange for Cordy Glenn if they want to trade Cordy Glenn. But I do think it's fascinating because clearly Glenn's contract stands out as a hefty contract. They're probably looking at availability and reliability compared to what they're paying and what they're on the hook for with Cordy Glenn. I wouldn't rule anything out, but I think it'll be an interesting call, mostly because of the way they played the last 2 weeks and the way Cordy Glenn has played.
Right. And yes, Cordy Glenn does have the highest cap figure on the roster now this year at $14.2 million. Mm-hmm. Darius previously had the highest cap figure at $16 million. And, would that avail you of that burden? Sure. But I think if you look around the league at the money that starting left tackles are being paid, and then you assess the quality that you get, the quality of play that you get from Cordy Glenn, and I understand when he's healthy,
right.
I think he's a pretty good value for what you get at left tackle from him in the run game and the pass game. Did Khalil Mack do anything yesterday?
No, and that's another
point
I wanted to make.
He did nothing yesterday. And, yes, he played on both sides, but he did nothing. I mean, he wasn't even a threat yesterday. That should not be dismissed arbitrarily. You give credit to Jordan Mills. You give credit to Cordy Glenn.
Patrick DeMarco got some
Patrick
chips
DeMarco,
on.
And, yeah, they had help chipping.
Oh, yeah.
There's no question about that. But I think you also got to tip your hat to these guys, too.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they only are noticed when they mess up or have a bad play or a mental error or whatever you want to say, a missed block. Tip your hat to those guys on the edges yesterday, because it wasn't just Khalil Mack. Bruce Irvin is not a bad outside linebacker.
No,
I mean, that guy is a proven pass rusher in this league, and they neutralized both of those guys. I mean, Tyrod at times had about 4 or 5 seconds to throw yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, it just – you got to tip your hat to the tackles, and I would be reluctant to part with Cordy Glenn. I think he is an underrated offensive tackle in this league. I'd certainly put him in the top half of left tackles in the NFL, maybe top 10.
Would you rule it out? Would you rule it out based on what's going on here?
Well, based on what the front office does,
yeah,
no. I don't think you can rule anything out. But be careful what you're doing here, because
I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do it either.
I think you want to be careful.
Be careful what you ask.
Your offensive tackle situation is in a very good place. And, there is a point where you can part with too much talent.
Yeah. No kidding.
And put yourself in a difficult spot. And I know people are going to make the argument, you have 5 offensive tackles. Are they all the caliber of Cordy Glenn now?
Right.
You don't have 5 Cordy
Glenns. I don't think they are.
No.
Deion Dawkins is an exciting young talent. He's not in the Cordy Glenn class yet, in my estimation. You can have any conversation you want about where you want to go with Deion Dawkins right now, but, he's a capable player. He's learning on the job. He's getting valuable experience in the time that he's had on the field, and all of that is great. But give me the lock, stock, and barrel guy that I know can do the job no matter who he's facing. And right now, that's Cordy Glenn for me.
Call from Pat in East Aurora. Go ahead, Pat.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment about the trade situation. I know people are going to bring it up. I think they should stand pat. I mean, they finally get the offensive line going. And, the running game, offensive line, and people are talking about trade Glenn. I just don't see that. And the other one, I'm just trying to head it out before, going out and get another wide receiver like the kid from Pittsburgh. I think with this coaching staff, you're going to be either all in or you're not in. And I don't think they want to go out and get any type of players who I would consider controversial or anything like that. And just the other thing I want to say was, Preston Brown had a really good game yesterday. I think his play has stepped up in the last couple of weeks.
I agree. I think Preston's had a really good season almost at the midway point of the season.
And it's going to be interesting to see what they do with him after the season. But he's an important – we're talking about his play on the field, actually making plays, but he is the quarterback of that defense. You know, as the middle linebacker, he is the one that makes all the calls and all the checks and all of that stuff, you know. So I think he's very important piece to that defense, and I don't know if – you know, I think they would want to keep him around. As we talk about all of these trade rumors and stuff, I'm perfectly fine. Look, if you wanted to bring another playmaker here, I don't know what you're willing to give up to bring another playmaker, you know. And to get a true playmaker on this roster, you're going to have to give something up. And you're talking about early draft picks, and they are not dealing any of their early draft picks. I don't know if they're going to deal any of their draft picks, you know, but they're definitely not dealing any early draft picks. And we talk about this offensive line. Now you have your offensive line going. It does not make sense to move another part, especially a key part like your left tackle.
You finally have things settled. Don't disrupt that now. Right. And the other thing, too, is I don't see too many teams being interested in Jimmy Graham. The guy's entering the final year of his contract. If you want him that bad, you can get him in free agency next year, assuming that Seattle doesn't re-sign him. And I can't believe that Seattle, with all the big contracts they have on their roster already, are going to heavily invest in a 30-year-old tight end for premium-type money. I think he does hit the market come the offseason. And Cordy Glenn is a guy who's under contract for three more seasons after this year.
Right.
You want to just toss that away after you work so hard to negotiate that deal? A deal that, oh, by the way, after 2018, decreases in salary compensation. It goes from 14.5 down to 12.5 and 12 and change. So I'd prefer to keep Cordy. I'll just say that.
So would I. But you've seen what's going on here lately.
Yes.
John in Lancaster. Hello, John. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks. Some good points. My first thought is I think McDermott, I wonder what you guys think, if he should be considered on the short list or on the list for Coach of the Year candidate. I know it's early. Not getting ahead of myself, but worth a conversation. And then I'm just curious about some of the play calls yesterday. Can a ball carrier advance his own fumble? And that 4th-and-1 play, was it challenged for that reason? And did the officials get it right? Thank you, gentlemen. Have a great day.
Yeah, I was madly scrambling through the rule book when I saw that the ball actually did come loose, but it didn't hit the ground.
Yeah, I think he kind of
– so because the ball did not hit the ground, that you can advance. If the ball hit the ground on the fumble and then he recovered it, can advance that. At least that was the delineation I was able to get out of the rule book after madly scrambling through that. And thank God there's a search function for the NFL online rule book, because there's no way I would have been able to find it in time before the review was over. So that is why he was able to advance it, because he only bobbled it. The ball did not hit the ground. If it hit the ground, can't advance.
And it looked like they got it right as far as the spot of the ball when it was all said and done.
Looks like they got it right. As for Coach of the Year candidates, he's in the mix. He's certainly in the mix. I think Sean McVay out with the L.A. Rams is in the mix. He's got that team at 5-2, I believe, is their record right now. Mm-hmm. Doug Peterson in Philly.
Yeah,
it's hard to argue with 7-1.
Right.
And Carson Wentz is kind of taking over that division right now, although there's teams in pursuit. You know, Dallas got a big win yesterday over Washington. So, you know, those are probably three of your early candidates for sure.
Chris, before we let you go, your take on the Marcell Dareus trade. Can I give you my take first and let's
sure.
set off you? Is that all right? People want to call it a cap move. I think more of it's a culture move. You know what I mean? It's not as if they traded him to help out the cap. I think I just got the sense that this coaching staff could not abide by having Marcell Dareus, with his long list of transgressions, including most recently in the preseason at Baltimore, having him at that number. I think it was the antithesis of the type of roster that Sean McDermott wants to build, and I think it's stuck in his craw. And could they afford Marcell at that number? Yes, they have, and they could have. But I just think it more than a cap cut, it was a culture cut. That's my take. Discuss. Yeah.
Well, I think it's a I think it's a combination of culture and cost.
Yeah.
You know, they saved $13 million this year. That's nothing to sneeze at. Yes, they take a dead money hit next year of over $14 million. You know, they'll be able to work around it. You expect the cap to go up at least $10 million. So a lot of what the cap goes up, you're going to eat in Dareus dead money and then some. But I think the the direction and the vision for this team outweighed the cost implications you're going to incur in 2018. It was more valuable to this franchise and where it wants to go to move a player that did not fit, no matter what his salary was, into the model of what every player on this roster is expected to be. Marcell Dareus is a good guy. You might even argue he's a good teammate from a personality perspective. But from a work ethic standpoint and a dedication standpoint, he just didn't have the mindset to grind every single day. Why? Probably because he never had to until he got to the NFL. In college, he was just physically superior to 95% of the players in Division I college football. Never had to work hard. And that was with a coach that had to prod him every single day in Nick Saban, because he prods every player that he has to get the most out of them. Now he comes to the NFL, and it's like, I got to really bust my tail every single day if I want to dominate. And he did it for stretches of his career here. You know, but I think at the end, it was going in a direction that was not going to satisfy the demands and the accountability that's put on every single player on this roster every single day. He's not wired in a way that was going to make him succeed here based on the way this program is run. And that's why he had to be moved out the door. And I know there are a handful of players in that locker room who were not shy about explaining their feelings about how they felt about Dareus as a teammate, because he didn't pull on the rope with the same dedication that a lot of other guys did. And it rubbed some guys the wrong way. And I understand why.
You know, I there are players that I've told, you know, don't go into certain situations. And every player is not for every situation. They're not for every team, every coach. I mean, every city, every team has its different culture. And I remember talking to a few players, you know, who were looking at the, as they were free agents, looking at a New England, you know, and I was like, don't go there. That's not that's not your type of place.
Yeah.
You know, it's a different grind. It's a different mindset that they have, that they you know, abide by up there. And here is becoming the same way as there in terms of the grind and what they ask of their players every single day. And it's not just a grind, but it's holding yourself accountable, you know. And so, look, I hope that Marcell goes on to have a great career down in Jacksonville. But this place just wasn't – he and this place just didn't mix. It just didn't go together. And so, you know, I'm happy for him. Now he gets to kind of start over, and hopefully he can make the most out of his career.
And real quick, Murph, just with respect to, you know, trade deadline stuff with the deadline tomorrow, I'd be surprised if something happens with Bolden. Unless a team is really desperate – and maybe a team like the Detroit Lions are, with Galladay's hamstring injury lingering and their pass game struggling, you know, maybe they pull the trigger. But I think it's going to take more than a conditional pick. And the reason why is, if the Bills accept a conditional pick, Bolden goes to that team, doesn't hit any of the conditions because he hasn't played for half a season, gets injured, and doesn't hit certain, you know, whatever the measuring stick is, they don't get anything. I think it's going to take more than that. You're going to have to give the Bills, I think, a late-round pick that is defined. Here's a late-round pick. I think it's going to take that. I don't know if a team's willing to part with that, unless they think they're still in the race and really need some help.
That's a good point. Hey, brownie points going up on the website, buffalobills.com,
later
tomorrow.
Later today.
Well,
we got a short week, Murph. Oh, we got to turn this stuff around.
Right. That's right.
So get your nominees in.
I got one for you. Patrick DeMarco. As a
hashtag brownie
hero.
Points. Sure.
Yeah.
Had
I really think
key blocks.
He's become a really important part of the resurgence of the running game the last couple of games. He doesn't show up on the stat sheet, really.
There was somebody last week. He just obliterated in the hole.
He's done that.
Was it Robert Ayers? It might have just – he knocked Ayers like clean. It was like a pancake block.
He had a couple of blocks like that yesterday, too. Yeah. Donald, do you have any brownie point nominees?
No.
Hashtag
you know why?
Brownie
I would
points.
Go with something like Brandon Tate, but everybody's talking about that, play,
right?
You know, on the second and 20.
He's on the nominee list. I know that.
And
based
what do you
on
do?
The feedback
folks
I've gotten
listening
from fans.
Want to nominate somebody? What do they?
So
do?
You just you tweet me at Chris Brown Bills, and then you give me your nominee and hashtag at Brownie Points. Just it's easier to compartmentalize everything based on that, separating that from all the other tweets that get fired off at me. So that way I can kind of put them all on a list and then take all of those nominees and all of the votes from different people. And I can tell you Brandon Tate is a popular nominee right now. That's a second and 20 play, guys.
Yeah.
And he gets a couple of blocks for help, too, so don't forget those guys. But just the effort that he did to come all the way across the field and still get past the sticks, convert a second and 20 after a bad penalty, you know, that's the kind of stuff that earns brownie points.
All right. Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com, joining us in studio. Donald and I are going to return in a moment. We'll take your phone calls, and we want to talk about what we liked in yesterday's win over the Oakland Raiders. Keep, stick around for that. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
More of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Carr takes the snap, dumps it off over the middle again. This time the pass is broken up and it is intercepted. Matt Milano on the run at the 25-20, 10-yard line, 5-yard line, touchdown! 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 Matt Milano, touchdown Buffalo! The pass was broken up, it popped into the air, right into the arms of the rookie. Matt Milano scores the touchdown and the Bills take the lead.
Matt Milano's touchdown, the Advanced Alarm defensive play of the game. Advanced Alarm providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones, we're coming to you live from One Bills Drive talking about yesterday's game. Our Twitter poll, we want to know what your biggest takeaway. There's a lot to take away from yesterday's Buffalo victory, but what's the biggest thing you take away from the Bills' victory over the Oakland Raiders yesterday? You can give us a call and discuss at 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-552-550. Or you can do it via Twitter and vote on Twitter. What's your biggest takeaway? It's a pretty close vote. 39% of you so far say controlling Oakland's offensive weapons is the biggest takeaway from that game yesterday. 34% of you say the impact by the rookies in turnovers especially, biggest takeaway. 22% say the breakout of the offense. 5% say something else. I'll tell you what I take away, Donald, is the takeaway, the absolute flood of takeaways by the Buffalo defense. 15 over the last four games. They've won four of those five games. And, you know, alternatively, only two turnovers in the last five games. So that's plus 13 in the last five games. They're plus 14 from the season leading the NFL. But they've taken the ball away 15 times, defense and special teams, in the last five games. That's a ridiculous amount. How long can it continue? I don't know.
I'm not sure how long it can continue. But one of the things that I took away from yesterday's game, and we talked about this leading up to the game last week, was if it was going to be some weather, was this team equipped to play, were they built to play
Oakland
in the type
or Buffalo?
Of Buffalo? Were they built to play in that type of weather? And you would think that they were, with the style that they want to play in the running game, obviously creating turnovers, you know, just being efficient in the passing game, not trying to live and die, throwing the ball all over the field, strong defense, stopping the run. You would think that this team was built, equipped to play through any type of bad weather. And it showed yesterday. You took that away from that game yesterday. The Bills are equipped to play in bad weather. They are ready for it. The Oakland Raiders weren't. And that's why you had turnovers by the Oakland Raiders. And you didn't have turnovers by the Buffalo Bills. The Raiders came in here, and those running backs, those guys holding the ball away from their body, which we know LeSean McCoy does, but, you know, they, as the Bills are coming, they're flying around, and they're hitting the ball. They're coming in, stripping, trying to get the ball out. And the Raiders came in here like they were at home in Oakland, you know. And then by the end of the game, when you can tell that that team had packed it in, I think it had a lot to do with, number one, the score on the scoreboard, but number two, the weather. And they wanted to get out of that stadium yesterday. Let's just get back to the locker room where it's warm, get dressed, and get on the plane down to Florida. I think the weather truly had a lot to do with the outcome of that game yesterday.
I was not impressed by the way the Raiders handled adversity, let's put it that way,
right,
in that game. Yeah, it's going against them. Are they a playoff contender or not, you know? They certainly don't look like a team that's anywhere close to the 12-win team from a year ago.
No, they don't.
And in fact, I think I went into this year with a certain amount of sympathy for the Raiders, who had that great regular season, lost Derek Carr at the end of the year, and had virtually no chance at all in the playoffs because of the quarterback injury. Based on the way they played yesterday, I have no sympathy for them now. There's something about that team that I don't like, and I was not impressed with yesterday. And
you know,
I'm impressed with their ability. I'm impressed with their talent. I think Derek Carr is really, really, really good. But Something's missing there for them to turn in that performance.
What I really think is you have all of this talent on the team, but they don't have the real mentality that they need to win games. And I'll tell you this. I think the loss of Marshawn Lynch was a huge, huge loss for that team yesterday because there were a couple of times where they tried to run the ball. Those running backs couldn't get it, the short yardage.
Right.
You know, where the Bills came up with some big-time stops on third down. And it was good to see. But for that team, I think they need Marshawn Lynch. They need his mentality out there on the field, beast mode. They need him in beast mode. So that he's out there, you know, just boom, boom, just running, breaking tackles and everything, and everybody else, they feed off of that. They didn't have him yesterday, and I think it truly hurt that team.
There was one play where Jalen Richard got stuffed at the line of scrimmage and came to the sideline, and you could read Jack Del Rio telling him, you know, you went to the wrong hole. And of course, they both figured in the turnovers, right?
I mean,
the ball popped out on the hit by Leonard Johnson, right into Milano's hands. That was popped out of Washington's hands, and Richard on the special teams fumble.
I think the loss of Marshawn Lynch, and as we talk about this team, the Oakland Raiders team being such a talented team, you have so many personalities on that team that, you know, when you don't have guys that are coming together, it can show out there on the field. And you saw a team that truly looked like they packed it in.
Yeah.
But I think if they had Marshawn Lynch, there were some short yardage things that they would have loved to give him the ball in that type of situation. And who knows if he would have picked it up or not. But they would have more confidence in him than they did in the other running backs that they have.
We'll get more of your calls on the air when we return. We'll talk about what we liked in yesterday's game. Coming up at 2:30, Sean McDermott, head coach of the Bills, with his Monday news conference. We will carry it live, and we'll talk more about the Darius trade with Mike Giannitti of SpotTrack coming up in just about 15 minutes. So come on back. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones, coming to you live from One Bills Drive. Mike Giannitti from SpotTrack is here. You're going to join us in the next segment to talk about the implications of the Marcell Darius trade from a salary cap standpoint. Donald, we've been putting it off. Let's get to it. What we liked about yesterday's win, there was an awful lot to like about the Bills' win yesterday. And let's start with you. You liked the way that they stopped the run. Oakland really didn't do anything against the run.
Yeah, I mean, they ended up having 54 total yards yesterday running the ball. And we were just talking about the impact of Marshawn Lynch. And Marshawn Lynch hadn't been playing well, but yesterday was a Marshawn Lynch type of day, you know, where it was wet, rainy, damp, and you need that type of grind-out type of running back. They didn't have that yesterday. And it showed with 54 total yards, the defense did a very good job of truly making the Raiders one-dimensional and having to throw the ball. They wanted to put the ball into the hands of Derek Carr, who was a very good quarterback. But when you're throwing the ball all over the yard in weather like that, you might get some tip balls and turnovers, and that's just kind of how it played out.
And you think that not having Marshawn made a big difference for them?
Yeah, and they did a good job of shutting everybody else down and making the Raiders one-dimensional, having to pass the ball.
I'll tell you what I liked, and we've talked about it briefly, the way they handled Khalil Mack. I thought that might have been the key to the whole thing yesterday going into the game, what they're going to do with Khalil Mack. They did, just as they did with Von Miller, they did a variety of things. First of all, Mack was moving left to right, and so sometimes it was Jordan Mills, sometimes it was Cordy Glenn. The Bills, chipped him and hit him a lot with Pat DeMarco. The Bills kept tight ends in to block him a little bit. They ran at him. They ran away from him. So it was a little bit of everything. But I think handling Khalil Mack was huge. Maybe it was just lip service. Everybody said, well, he can wreck a game. He can wreck a game. He didn't come close to wrecking that game yesterday. Part of it, I think, was just – I guess I'm going to say lack of effort, Donald. He made a couple of, you know, strong pass rushes, but I didn't see a whole lot from Khalil Mack.
He didn't. And, you know, I don't know if you guys talked about this on your broadcast, but, you know, I left you guys at halftime and went home and watched the game, and they kept showing Khalil Mack on the sideline. And it was like, why is Khalil Mack still on the sideline?
Yeah,
it was like, what's going on out there? Especially late in the game. You're talking late third quarter, fourth quarter, when you need him out there to take over a game. He's on the sideline. He wasn't hurt or anything like that. So, yeah, they did a great job of neutralizing Mack.
Another thing that Donald says he liked was defensive backfield play by the Buffalo Bills. I think that's pretty obvious. They were solid back there, even without two starters, E.J. Gaines and Jordan Poyer.
Yeah, I mean, the corners overall did a very good job. They, you know, their highest receiver was Crabtree with 83 yards. But for the most part, look, you shut them down. He didn't score. Cooper didn't score. He only had 48 yards. Washington, their running back, had 62 yards, you know, receiving. So overall, I think the DBs, the back end, obviously you had some turnovers as well. They are playing well on the back end of this defense. They're playing together. It doesn't matter if Trey Elson has to come in. Sharice Wright played well yesterday. All of these guys collectively did a great job against an Oakland Raiders offense, especially in the passing game, that is dangerous.
Tre'Davious White played well, and the Bills did something yesterday, just keeping Tre'Davious White on Amari Cooper. He didn't move around much, but from time to time, Cooper would go from the right side to the left side, no matter where he went, except for the couple of times in the slot. It was Tre White on Amari Cooper, best man against best man, and I thought Tre White handled him expertly. I thought he was outstanding yesterday.
He did. Look, Tre'Davious White, you're talking about people playing with confidence on this team. I don't know if anybody has more confidence than Tre'Davious White right now. I mean, he's being asked to cover guys week in and week out, the number one, like, top 10 receivers in the game, and he's doing a good job. And there will be plays where he'll get burnt, but then he'll come back and make great plays and cover these guys. And I think he's playing with the most confidence out of anybody on this team, maybe the most confident rookie in the league this year.
Another thing that Donald liked was, it's pretty obvious, but LeSean McCoy, who had these great moments in preseason and then got off to the slow start, waited six games into the season before he found the end zone, and now he scored four in the last couple of games, including the long run. He is one of the dynamic running backs in the game, I would say, and he's demonstrated that, including in yesterday's game.
Yeah, yesterday, 27 carries for 151, a touchdown. He had the long of 48 yards, but you're starting to see LeSean McCoy come on. And that's what we want to see. You want to see this offense, especially as you're getting later into the year. It's cold outside. You're probably going to have a bunch of weather games like this, no matter where you are. And to see your running back playing the way he played yesterday and the way he played last week, I'm loving to see, you know, what he's doing out there on the field now. He's having fun. They're all having fun doing that dance in the end zone. You know, it's all about celebrations with me.
I know that.
And I love to see it.
Very troubling. I think
it's troubling.
No, really. I think, and this goes along with you, one of the things that I like was Pat DeMarco's play, and I've liked that for most part all season long. But I think the Bills have found a really defined role for their fullback. He embraces it. He absolutely lays people out from time to time. He was part of handling Khalil Mack in yesterday's game, and I think DeMarco's blocking was a big key to getting that run game going yesterday. All right, we'll get more on this. We'll hear more from the locker room in the third and final hour of the show. Sean McDermott's news conference will carry it live about 35 minutes away. We come back, we're going to do kind of a salary cap analysis of the Marcell Dareus move, and Mike Jannitti, the co-founder, or the founder, really, of SpotTrack.com, the website that tracks salary cap issues all over professional sports. Mike Jannitti will join us live in studio to talk about that when we return. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
The update from One Bills Drive, where the Buffalo Bills will be on the field later today for probably a light practice, maybe just a little bit more than a stretch, as they've got the short week now coming up with a game against the New York Jets on Thursday. The Bills coming off their victory yesterday over the Oakland Raiders, 34-14, the final score. Their second divisional matchup of the season at midseason as they play the Jets. They beat the Jets back in week one of the season, 21-12. That is an 8:25 kickoff at MetLife Stadium in the Meadowlands, and we'll hear from head coach Sean McDermott, who will update injuries and where the Bills stand now with their 5-2 record. That's coming up at the bottom of this hour. Around the NFL, Bears tight end Zach Miller underwent emergency surgery overnight in effort to save his injured left leg. The surgery performed in New Orleans after the Bears lost to the Saints as the doctors try to repair a damaged artery in Miller's leg. He dislocated his knee in the third quarter of the game against the Saints. Miller's knee considered more significant than a regular dislocation, which already is a serious injury. Speaking of injuries, Indianapolis Colts quarterback Andrew Luck is looking for more opinions to determine why his surgically repaired shoulder is not progressing as expected. The surgery on a torn labrum was back on January 15th, and he's been in and out of the surgery protocol, including a setback, which was a couple of weeks ago when he experienced soreness in his throwing shoulder. It means the Colts aren't quite sure if or whether Luck will be back this season. Monday Night Football tonight, the Denver Broncos and the Kansas City Chiefs. The Broncos go in with 3 wins, 3 losses. The Chiefs at 5-2, sitting on top of the AFC West. The Chiefs have won the last 3 times they played against the Denver Broncos. And the Houston Astros now 1 win away from their first World Series title after last night's epic win, a 13-12 win in the 10th inning. Houston had to rally from deficits 4 different times in last night's game. They lead the series now 3-2. Tomorrow night, the biggest game in Astros franchise history, Game 6, Tuesday, tomorrow night at 7:30 with Justin Verlander on the mound for the Houston Astros. It is the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy, Donald Jones, and a special guest joining us in studio, Mike Jannetty, the founder and publisher of SpotTrack.com, the website that deals with salary cap issues and salary issues all over professional sports, right? Not just the NFL, Mike.
Yeah, you bet. We're busy this time of year with all the sports kind of cranking up and, yeah. You know, baseball, World Series, and offseason coming for that. So we're busy. We're having fun when we're rolling along here.
What are baseball numbers offseason like?
Fun. It's my favorite. It's my favorite sport. It's my favorite sport to track. Yeah, everything's guaranteed. There's no you know, funny situations in terms of, you know, having to deal with breakdowns and things like that. It's just straight money. And, you know,
straight
it just
money.
Straight money. That's right.
And, straight cash,
and annually just gets bigger and bigger and a lot more fun. So, you know, that's a good time of year for me that in the winter.
And that comes up December, typically. Stuff gets cooking, right?
Yeah, winter meetings, it's, you know, the hot stove kicks in and these trade rumors just fly. It's like no other sport in terms of a full month of just teams kind of, you know, meandering behind the scenes. And you kind of hear things leak out that, in terms of me, help me project guys in terms of where they might land in terms of March and April.
Because the football salaries sometimes get a little cloudy, right, with guaranteed money. It's different.
Yeah, so you've got the media reports and, you know, the agent reports and those big numbers. But, you know, really what it boils down to is how much is guaranteed now, and the cash flow. Those are the things we kind of look at. So it takes a little time to get that kind of stuff.
And the NBA, is that fully guaranteed? How does
– Yeah, for the most part. I mean, there's some few bottom guys that have non-guaranteed salaries, but – for the most part, 95% of the league is guaranteed, and that money is just getting ridiculous.
Yeah. Mike Jannetty is the founder of SpotTrack.com, the website where you can go to check on salary cap issues and salary issues all over professional sports, including the National Football League. Mike is just around the corner from us here in Orchard Park, and we brought you in here today because of the events of last Friday night, the trade of Marcell Dareus. Let me say at the outset, I didn't think that trade could happen. I didn't think the Bills could find a trade partner who would be willing to take on that contract that Marcell had.
Yeah, so I'll say I'll agree, but probably from a different standpoint. So you know, I see these players on the field and behind the scenes, I'm seeing dollar signs, right? I see these guys. I take some time to see the football sense of it too, but generally I'm seeing a contract. And with Dareus, it was such a bloated, structured contract that it seemed untradeable. It seemed certainly it's unreleasable. They were no way they were going to cut him at this point. So, you know, for them to find a trade partner and a good trade partner, it's not like he's going to a bad team. He's going to a contender. I mean, they probably made him real happy as well. So it was a shock for me. I had him on a low list of, you know, possibly being traded just because the rumors were there. I mean, certainly the Bills had seemed willing to move him if possible. But yeah, to be able to find a trade partner, get a decent value back for it, it's a good win for the Bills.
Let's talk about his contract, if you will, and how you said it was almost he was unreleasable with that contract. But it's not so much the overall numbers. I saw you write about this over the weekend. It's not the $96 million total value that makes it outlandish. It's the way it was structured.
So he had a $25 million signing bonus, which should be enough. Mm-hmm. But then he had another $7 million bonus the next year. And tack on that, his salary for next year was guaranteed the year before, which that's the part that makes it really uncuttable, unreleasable, because the Bills would not only be on the hook for the current salary, but next year's salary as well. So when you're looking at a structure, you've got major bonus, which adds dead cap. You've got 2 years of salaries guaranteed, which adds dead cap. And that's just a situation that really the Bills needed to get themselves out of, you know, and they did a great job of doing so.
What did the Jacksonville Jaguars get themselves into as far as salary cap and what they're on the hook for with Marcell?
Yeah, so they're going to have him for about $5.5 million this year, which is excellent. I mean, that's incredible value. And then next year, for the next 4 years, they're at about $10, $11 million for the cap hit. So, you know, it's a better number for a guy like Dareus, who is, you know, he's a run-stopping guy. He's not going to have tons of pass rush numbers, things like that, in terms of production. So it's a better number. But also, after next year, they can get out of this for free. So this could be a two-year deal for them. You know, minimal dead cap next year. The Bills really took the brunt of that dead cap this year and next year, and Jacksonville's kind of scot-free going forward.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. What did the Bills take on as far as dead cap after this trade on Friday?
Yeah, so the Bills incurred $10.5 million this year, right around that number, which saved about $5.5 million. And next year they take a $14.2 million dead cap hit. So $14.2 million for him to be on Jacksonville next year, which hurts, but it's also – you know, almost $3 million in savings when you look at it. So, again, they save money this year, they save money next year, and then after that it's completely off the contract.
How much total do they have right now?
So, that brought them to about $13 million in terms of their current cap space, which, you know, you look at it now and it seems like an okay number. Are they really going to use it? No, but remember, it rolls into next year. So when you're taking that into account, if they've saved $5.5 million this year on Darius and they save $3 million next year, it could be a possibility of $8 million in savings for next year in terms of moving him off your roster this year.
And the savings come about because of the fact that they traded him. That would not have been available had he been released.
No chance, because, like I said, you had partial salary guaranteed next year, which they would have had to take on.
Right.
So it's a number that – it's a big number, $14.2 million for next year. But, again, they save money, and that's it going forward.
I mean, you look at, as we have Jacksonville, they have, like, still $34.9 million to spend. So they were just like, you know, we can go ahead and take on.
They can certainly take it this year. Yeah. What's interesting about Jacksonville is, you know, next year and for the next couple of years, they're actually in some cap trouble, which is for the first time in a long time. And this is a team that's generally got tons of cap space heading into the offseason. So they've got a situation with Bortles. You know, they've got to take care of their quarterback. And now Darius, you know, adds a new layer of cap that they've got to take care of in terms of the next couple of years.
With Mike Jannetty from SpotTrack.com talking about the financial implications of the Marcell Darius deal. I mentioned to Donald, and I guess Chris Brown was out here an hour or so ago, Mike, about how the Bills obviously could have used some relief, but they already had the contract. They could have handled this contract, Darius, going forward. To me, what precipitated the deal was the fact that I don't know that this coaching staff could handle having Darius at his number on this roster with all of his issues, his baggage, his transgressions, and his work ethic.
And I could see that, you know, he didn't seem to be the leader type. He certainly, like I said, he's not. The numbers don't jump off the page in terms of the pass rush or things like that. In terms of him being a defensive tackle, so you know, is he worth being your highest paid player going for the next 4 or 5 years? You know, I could see where that would be a problem for the front office and the coaching staff and things like that. So, again, they did a great job to kind of move him to a good spot for him and get some value back.
And we'll pay the price for a couple of years.
Yeah, just next year.
The expected increase that goes up every year, each team's salary cap, will that mitigate any damage? I mean, in other words, will it make up whatever the extra cost is?
It's extremely possible. I've seen reports that another $10 million could be added, so you're talking another $178 million, you know? So in that regard, yeah, you're talking inflation, things like that. The Bills should be in okay shape for next year in terms of getting Darius off your roster.
Yeah. Mike Jannetty is with us from SpotTrack. I want to talk to you about it's been reported that Cordy Glenn might be on the trade market. No confirmation of that here from One Bills Drive at all. We talked about it with Chris last hour. Based on the unpredictability of the moves that have been made here over the last 6 months or so, I wouldn't rule anything out. What would a potential trade of Cordy Glenn look like financially for the Bills in terms of the cap?
Yeah, so it's similar to Darius, just a little bit less, right? So you've got a guy who is now currently the highest cap figure on the Bills. You know, he's up there near in $14 million area. So they would take a significant dead cap hit this year and next year. You're talking 9.4 this year, 9.6 next year to trade him right now, which before the deadline tomorrow. So, but again, that represents almost $5 million in savings this year and next year. So combine that, if you roll it over, you're looking at $10 million in savings next year. So, you know, getting these guys off your roster, if you can do so from a football standpoint, certainly helps from a business standpoint. It definitely does. Cordy Glenn's an interesting situation because he's playing well. He's on an offensive line that's playing well, and this is a team that's winning right now. So there's going to be some speculation in terms of can you afford to lose your left tackle. But from a business standpoint, it does help them.
How much dead cap is too much? How much dead cap money? What, I guess, from a percentage standpoint, is that the way you look at it?
So some franchises think any is too much. I mean, the Cincinnati Bengals and the Packers generally have almost nothing because they make no in-season moves like this that would incur that kind of thing. They're not big free agency players, so they don't generally have to cut guys after a couple of years because of bloated contracts from free agency, things like that. So there are GMs who don't want any of it, nothing to do with it. There are franchises like the Cowboys and the Saints who make it a part of their life, right? So they trade for guys, they sign contracts that they know they'll have to get rid of eventually, so they factor it into their caps. There's a decent number out there. You know, 10% of your cap, 15% of your cap is probably great. There's a lot of teams. Here's the thing. It comes in waves, right? It kind of comes as you sign players. So is your quarterback signed? Are your big players signed? Or are they all rookies? Are they young? So it kind of comes in waves and valleys. But the general, I think, consensus across what we've seen over the past 6 years is 10, 15% of your cap, if that's how you're running in terms of dead cap, you're okay. But, you know, the Bills are going to take a significant number, especially if they do trade Cordy Glenn. I mean, we're looking at right now they've got $16 million in dead cap for Darius and Sammy Watkins, mm-hmm. you know, two moves that people probably didn't see coming. And I'm not sure they saw it coming.
Right.
You know, I think maybe they got phone calls and said, we've got to do this,
yeah.
you know.
Yep.
So I'm not sure they had that factored in, you know, in August or July. So it's a matter of those kind of things coming up, being ready for it, being able to handle it. And that's why you don't want to run yourself up to that cap line every year, you know.
You know, the Bills right now have – you have Cordy Glenn on your roster. You have some other guys who might either be released or asked to take pay cuts. In your mind, who would some of those guys be?
Yeah, so it's interesting. Going forward next year, we could be in for, you know, a total overhaul in terms of their salary cap, or we could be in for a stability moment, right? So, I mean, you've got guys like LeSean McCoy, who's the highest cap hit in terms of running backs going forward, you know, outside of Le'Veon Bell right now. But that's a guy who, you know, is he a fringe in terms of his cap number? I don't know. He's playing so well. You know, he's certainly an asset to this team. You know, the Tyrod situation is extremely interesting, you know, just from a football standpoint and from a business standpoint. You know, he represents an $18 million cap hit, which is $11 million more than or $9 million more than he stands for right now. So that's a number that they'll need to account for if he's going to be on the team going forward. You know, some of these offensive linemen, you've got Incognito and those coming off. So are you going to be able to handle those going forward for the next couple of years if that's a situation you want to get yourself into? You know, they're in pretty good shape. Charles Clay is tough. Charles Clay is guaranteed. So he's going to be a big dead cap hit if you want to move on from him. And the injury certainly puts a cringe in that. So, yeah, there's going to be a need to move guys for sure. Again, they'll probably try to use the trade because it's a better situation for them in terms of the dead cap. But they're going to have to make some cap casualties. That'll be a big focal point for them in March, come free agency time. But you know, they're okay right now, and they're making themselves a better for it with these moves right now.
Mike Jannetty from SpotTrack in studio with us, talking about the trade deadline is tomorrow at 4 p.m. The Bills already made the one big deal with Marcell Dareus. I want to get you back to Tyrod Taylor for a moment, and he's playing well. Let's put aside that for a second. If you know they keep him around next year, as you said, his cap figure would double, right?
Double.
$9 million to $18
million. Yeah, exactly.
$18 million is still not outrageous when it comes to starting quarterbacks in the league, and certainly doesn't preclude the Bills from going out and, you know, finding and trying to develop his successor, if that's what they're looking at.
I think it's exactly the route they should take. I think, you know, you're talking about a middle-of-the-road cap hit in terms of a starting quarterback right now. Nothing that can really damage you in terms of, you know, having to sign other guys or make moves. Like you said, there's options of restructuring. There's options of cap casualties where you need to do that. You know, if he's the quarterback that can at least win, you know, this year and next year, they should run with that. They should make that work. $18 million is not going to kill you. That won't stop them from drafting, from trading. Where it will stop you, and it's an interesting dynamic right now, is it will stop you probably from going out and getting a free agent quarterback, which teams will be doing. We're sort of in uncharted waters here this coming off season, where there's going to be five or six legitimate quarterbacks hitting the free agent market.
Who do you got?
I mean, you've got Bradford, you've got Cousins, you've got Garoppolo, you've got a few more I can't think of right now, but there's some significant names. Drew Brees, who may be out there on the open market and could help teams win immediately. So there's going to be different ways for teams to get quarterbacks, and the draft is probably number one because of the cheap money. But for the Bills, certainly that having Tyrod on this roster on this team next year will not hold them back from that, from a high draft pick.
Now, the Bills, have they shown you any signs? Because from a football standpoint, they haven't shown us any signs of we need to win now, make a move to win now. Now, from a business standpoint, you look at it a little differently. I don't know if they've shown you any signs of we need to win right now.
So what they've shown is two things. I think the discussion you had where the coaching staff just really wanted to kind of trim some of the fat in terms of the football versus business side of it, that is what they've shown. But in doing so, they're saving cap. They're saving cap for a need to be able to build their cap next year if they want to. And part of that would be Tyrod, right? Tyrod's a $9 million raise. That's money they need to kind of ascertain now in order to make that work. So if they are, you know, kind of all in next year with this Tyrod system, with Tyrod and LaShawn and those guys who are here now, they would have a need to build cap space to do that, to add, you know, players from in free agency, you know, on a small margin, bring in some big draft picks, because they've got expensive draft picks. That's another thing to think about. They're going to have a draft pool that's substantial with, you know, two firsts, two seconds, things like that. So they're going to have to pay just the draft guys next year, you got to remember. So there's a need to build cap space now, which they're doing, and part of that could be keeping Tyrod in the fold.
All right, now I'm going to ask a stupid question. All those draft picks next year, do they get more money in the rookie pool and the draft pool? I mean, it depends on how many picks you have, right?
Yeah. So they'll have to just afford them, right? It's whatever those draft picks cost. So, you know, the cap raise will raise the rookie wage scale in terms of how those first and second rounders are laid out in terms of what they're going to cost, and the Bills will just have to be able to afford them, or they're going to have to trade those picks. So it's something to take into consideration along with free agency, along with cap casualties as, you know, February and March turns.
Mike Giudetti from SpotTrack in studio with us. You wrote about a week ago trade deadline candidates around the NFL with some interesting names. I don't think you're saying here these guys will be traded, but moreover, you wanted to look at if they were traded, what it would mean. And let's start with number one name on your list, Jimmy Garoppolo. I don't think he's going to be traded.
I don't. In fact, when I write these kind of articles with the NFL, I never think anybody's getting traded because, you know, it ends up being such a boring deadline. You know, teams really don't use this vice, and they should. And I'm a big proponent that they should. I think it's a way for teams to handle their cap this year, make their cap better next year, as we've talked about with the Darius situation.
Now, as you're talking about, the trade deadline in the NFL is boring, but it seems like you have younger GMs that are willing to make these trades now.
Right. It's an education, I think. I think it's guys getting comfortable with the cap as a whole, but also getting comfortable with how the cap can work positionally with the roster, right? Like, you've got a guy like Jimmy Graham. He's atop my trade list. He's being rumored all over the world today in terms of, you know, being a trade option. He's on an expiring contract, right? Hmm. I mean, there's a slim chance Seattle brings him back on a decent deal next year. That's a guy right there who can add value to both the Seahawks and a new team, just in terms of cap space and football sense for the new team. So those are the kind of players, and you know, that's what you see in baseball every year, right? These expiring contracts, guys just want to get some value back. Draft picks mean a lot more to baseball and hockey and those sports than they do to NFL teams later in the draft, right? Those sixth and seventh rounders that these trades kind of bring about. But there are guys with value out there who could bring significant draft picks back, who could clear cap space, and could work for both teams going forward. Darius is a decent situation. I've got guys like T.Y. Hilton, Jeremy Maclin. They're on bad teams right now.
Yeah.
Those are guys who can help teams from a football sense. And, you know, if you're looking at next year as a rebuild, like those teams I think will be, you know, you want to get some cap space now to roll that over, get some cap space for next year, and get a good draft pick back. I think T.Y. Hilton can afford you, you know, maybe a third, fourth round pick, you know, in terms of how we've seen other trades work in the last 6 months. So, you know, it's a vice teams haven't used a lot. You're right, though. Teams are kind of coming into fold in terms of how things are working with the cap. So I think, you know, maybe there's a chance this is a more exciting next 24 hours, but we'll see.
And thinking of the reasons why that would be, and it kind of gets back to old school thinking, right? Just like, well, we can't disrupt our team at this stage, midseason. Doesn't know the system. We'd have to teach him. But it takes a younger GM or a bold GM to say, I don't care about that. I'm looking ahead already.
That's right. And maybe there's a little bit more parity in terms of the systems that are being run. You know, I think back in the day there was a West Coast it was maybe you had to have a good fit. But, you know, positionally, I think there are positions where you could throw a guy in. We'll see how Darius works out, you know, on that Jacksonville line. But, you know, I think he'll be fine in terms of whatever they're running down there. It's probably something he's familiar with Doug Marrone. But, you know, guys I mentioned, these wide receivers, you know, you've got experience with that. I mean, how would that work? You know, if you had to jump onto a new team week nine,
it's tough.
You know, it would be tough. But I think there'd be a quick education with some of these guys, these veterans who've kind of been bounced around a little bit.
I was just about to say, it really depends on what they ask of you. Like, if they want you to come in and play right away, they're going to put the time into you like they did with Deontay Thompson.
Yeah.
Staying here till 10 midnight, you know, just trying to make sure that you understand everything. The interesting thing for me for the Bills right now is they're in a situation sitting at 5-2 where, you know, you have a good team, a team that is winning right now, a team that really believes, but then you have guys that you can say that it would make sense if they moved on from a business standpoint, you know, and Coach McDermott and Brandon Bean have always talked about, since they were both hired, you know, we want to build through the draft. We want to, and they've been adding a lot of draft picks, you know, and so it's like you're sitting at 5-2. They've shown signs that they will disrupt their roster, but at the same time, sitting at 5-2, how much do you want to disrupt your roster? How much talent do you want to just part ways with?
Yeah,
it's tough.
It's interesting because we track the different sports, and that's kind of the question that hockey teams have every year, right? Are we buyers or are we sellers? Mm-hmm. Right, midway through that in that February market. So that's similar to what the Bills are dealing with right now. What you said a very important thing though. They've already got the draft picks.
Yeah,
right. They're not going out to get value for next year in terms of that. This is a situation where they've got 24 hours here to say, can we kind of pull the trigger? Can we use one of those as an asset to make ourselves better? And maybe it's not just for this year. Jimmy Graham's an expiring contract. He'd be a one and done.
Yeah.
But a guy like T.Y. Hilton, he's got 3-4 years left on that contract. Mm-hmm. You could put a significant asset out to get a guy like that, and that helps your roster for the whole run, right? For 3 years. So, there's different ways to do it, but the Bills do have the assets to make a move right now if they decide they're going to, be all in.
Mike, thanks for this. Great to have you in here to kind of work through some of these details. We appreciate it.
You bet.
Mike Jannetty from SpotTrack.com. Check it out. Check out the website, not just for football, all the other sports as well, as Mike keeps an eye on the contracts and on the salary cap situations. SpotTrack, SpotTrack.com with Mike Jannetty. When we return, Sean McDermott's going to speak to the media. We will carry his news conference live. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones, live at One Bills Drive on the day after the Bills' 34-14 win over the Oakland Raiders.
It's always better on Victory Monday.
Yeah,
it's
although they don't,
they
don't observe Victory Monday here in terms of days off.
They don't.
Very interesting.
They don't. Now, later in the season, I remember when I was here, it was always like, listen, you earn the right for Victory Monday, So if you're in the playoffs, and it's locked in, maybe we'll give you a Victory Monday if you win. But, until then, you're going to come in to work on Monday and everything is going to – I don't know. Coach McDermott strikes me as the guy is every week – this is our routine. This is our plan, and we don't get away from our plan. There is no Victory Monday. Victory Monday is after you win it all. And you
I wonder, though, if they continue to have success. And I do think smart coaches, of which I think Coach McDermott is one of them, realize the toll that is taken physically on teams as the season goes along and may be looking for opportunities to pull off the gas pedal a little bit.
Coach McDermott, he also is the type of coach that takes the temperature of his team. So when you talk about the toll, he can tell, okay, we need to back off a little bit. We're playing good. We're winning games. Let's just back off, give them a day off so that they can kind of relax. Guys, I'd rather you not leave town and do any of that stuff, but we're going to give you a day off so that you can kind of relax a little bit.
Well, the coach is ready to go, ready to speak to the media on the other side of One Bills Drive here over in the media room. Sean McDermott with his Monday news conference. Let's listen in.
Okay, good afternoon. We'll go ahead and open it up to questions.
Is there an update on Jordan Poyer, maybe the progress he's made, and you're expecting he's going to be available Thursday?
Right, he's made some good progress to this point, Josh. He'll be listed as limited today, and we'll just see. Take it one day at a time right now.
How much about Charles Clay?
Continues to make good progress. He will not participate in practice today, and, we'll just see how he progresses throughout the week.
Sean, what is the biggest challenge to turn it around so quick? This is your first time doing it. As the head coach, I know you've done it many times as a coordinator. What's the biggest challenge here?
Yeah, just, a couple things. Number one is to get as fresh as possible, mind, body, and spirit, get those in the right spot, and then just to make sure we understand our plan for this in terms of the game plan for the week.
Sean, when you look at it now, you guys are 5-2. I was thinking about the first day of training camp, and you sounded like a lot of other coaches did at the time, with the words that you used, process and camaraderie and all this other stuff. But you've been able to get through to your team. How have you been able to do that, taking so little time?
I got a good staff. I've got good coaches. We've got, good players on this team in terms of guys that, through the scouting process and that Brandon Bean and his staff have brought in, that they've got the DNA that we're looking for, and that makes my job a whole lot easier. When you have good people in the building to help and support me, goes a long way towards what we've been able to do to this point.
Are you surprised that the players have been that easy to to sign up?
You know, I just, again, I keep going back to, you know, just they're good people. And, you know, these are guys that are winners. And they've come from places. Some have been here. Some have come from other places. And that's the part of when you're building a team, that's the neat part about it. To watch these guys come together. You watch the sideline yesterday after Brandon Tate's catch and run. And what a neat thing, you know, gives me, you know, just chills just going back and thinking about that. We shared that in the team meeting a few minutes ago, and 20 years or so around the NFL, I don't know that I've ever seen that type of deal on the sideline, you know. Pretty neat.
They're seeing a new attitude, a new swag. Why should Buffalo believe now?
Well, you know, we just take it one game at a time. Honestly, you know, we've got a short turnaround this week, and we've got to get focused on the Jets and the task at hand in front of us. So that's what we continue to do. Just try and get better every week, and that's the mindset we embrace, that growth mindset. And so that's really, you know, what we focus on every week. So trying to put our best foot forward.
Is there any sense of validation, though? I mean, just for a brief moment, as you're walking through the tunnel after the game last night, or walking to your car to the parking lot or driving home, is there any sense of validation that 5-2 is beyond what a lot of people outside this building expect?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was extremely proud of the players, you know, and the way that they played yesterday. I mean, you know, they were focused. I mean, it's fun to be a part of it. It really is. It's 5-2. No one gives out awards for 5-2. So we got to keep that in mind. Having said that, I'm extremely proud of these guys. They've worked hard. They've earned everything that they've gotten so far. And for that, yeah, I mean, absolutely. I'm extremely proud of them, and I'm happy for them. I'm happy for the fans of this team that they've gotten what they've so long have you know desired and yearned for so long. That yeah, I mean, I'm fired up about that, and you know I know I don't show that emotion all the time up here, but yeah, I'm pumped up about that, and it's a result of putting in the work, you know, and that's the great part about it. These guys, they earn it.
When you saw the tape play, I mean, it was like, you know, these guys just, it was like a boom, kaboom. I mean, they just jumped off the sideline.
Yeah.
So at that point, are you thinking, all right, now I got something that it might even be stronger than what I thought?
You know, yeah, I mean, we were flowing. We were in the moment of the game, you know, Bucky and everything. So, but you go back, and last night I got home, I got a text from one of the coaches on my staff about it. I got a coach in my office first thing bright and early this morning about the same play. You got to show this play, coach, to the guys. You know, I mean, that's you don't see that every day around the NFL. You don't see that every day around professional sports. You know, I go to my son's game on the weekend, and you see some of that, which is so authentic and pure and just raw, just guys loving to play the game. That, you know, it's what's right about sports, professional sports, and that there's still heart, there's still soul, there's still spirit involved in it, and I love that part. You know, so then you see Deion Dawkins doing Thriller on the sideline. You know, I think they're playing Thriller in the game, you know. So these guys are having fun. They're having fun. You know, during the week, they put themselves through it too. And that's when you put yourself through that, through the work and the grind during the week, yeah, man, that's fun to see because they can enjoy the moment come Sunday.
After they scored the first possession of the game, they moved right down on you. What exactly was said amongst the defensive coaches? Clearly, it looked like you made some type of adjustments. What exactly happened? Because they really didn't do much of anything after that first possession.
Well, I thought Leslie and his staff did a really good job of adjusting, you know, just in terms of the tempo, in and out of the huddle on their side of the ball, on the offensive side of the ball. We just collect so much information early in the game and make adjustments, you know, on really in all three phases. And I thought whether it was the defensive side yesterday doing that, Sal, or special teams or offensively yesterday, we made – you know, some really good adjustments, Rick and his staff and Danny and his staff as well. So, you know, that's you can have a good game plan going in. It's important, though, that you can adjust throughout the game, and especially early.
Looking at the defense, though, the first three games of the season, you guys combined for 10 sacks. The last four games, you guys only had 3 sacks. I know, a lot of it is dictated by how good the quarterback can get the ball out because you're getting pressure, and the offensive lines you guys have faced the last couple weeks have been some of the best in the NFL. But what do you guys, on a quick turnaround, no less, knowing you're going into the Jets, to kind of get more pressure.
Bless you. Bought me a little bit of time right there. No, it's a fair question. I mean, when you put the watch on it, when you're able to take time and put the watch on it, the ball is coming out fast, and so then you got to play coverage. And I thought we did well with that yesterday. And there's different ways to affect the quarterback, and that's really what I'm focused on. I thought our front four played extremely hard yesterday, and we got some guys rolling in there as well that did some good things. So, just like I said earlier, you don't get any awards, trophies for being 5-2. We have to continue to grow, continue to evolve, get better, adjust where we need to adjust, and adapt to what's going on. He'd be similar to Charles Clay at this point. So he's. Go ahead.
Philosophy overview, outlook on playing Thursday night games, and just because of you've gone through this, you've been in the league a long time, you see what it does to guys' bodies and minds and things like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, I know that we're focused on this game, and I know that to get their minds and bodies right is important. That's what I know, I'm just focused on this team right now, Sal, and getting them ready to go for Thursday night. And the great part about it is guys were in early this morning trying to get their bodies back and ready to go. So, really just focus on the next 2 or 3 days that we have to get ready and tee it up come Thursday night.
Trade deadline's coming up tomorrow. How much are you able to stay in the loop because of the quick turnaround?
Yeah, Brandon and his staff, they're on top of it. Brandon and I speak, sometimes hourly, really. So, I know Brandon spoke about it the other day, and I just depend on him to keep me up to date on what's going on or what's not going on. So, I know he looks at everything in terms of trying to improve our roster.
Given that you guys are 5-2 now, when we spoke to Brandon, it was 4-2, that was on Friday night, does that impact how you approach the deadline in the sense of maybe trying to be a little bit more aggressive and getting help for this year's roster, knowing that you're firmly in the playoff race versus making a move that could be for the future in the way that, the Marcel trade was when it's just the draft pick coming back?
Right. Yeah, there's a couple different ways to look at it. I mean, I think the biggest thing right now is that we continue to focus on our vision for this football team. And so, obviously we want to win, and we've talked about it for a long time in terms of win now and also win later. So, that remains the vision, and we're gonna approach philosophically everything with that in mind.
Hey, Sean, one of those guys whose name has come up in trades, Cordy Glenn, as we know. But the last 2 weeks, since he's been back on the field, it seems there's no coincidence your running game has been better. I mean, have you seen that his return to the lineup has made a big difference there?
He's done a good job. He really has. Excuse me. Cordy's a force, and when he's in there, he's good in the run game. He's good in the pass game. He's a big body, so he's played a number of games in the NFL. So we have a lot of trust in Cordy Glenn. And I thought our offensive line did a really good job yesterday with that in mind, with Cordy in there and the game before. So we ran the ball well. Yesterday we protected well again. And that's not easy when you look at, 52 and 51 coming off of both edges yesterday. And a lot of credit to our offensive line and Rick Dennison and the scheme and Juan Castillo, our offensive line coach. So I thought Jordan Mills on the right side, when you talk about Cordy, you look on the other side with Jordan, I thought he did a really nice job throughout the game.
How impressed are you with the whole next man up, no matter who you plug in? For the most part, has made a big play, whether it's Trey Elson getting an interception yesterday, Milano doing what he's done in place of Humber. How impressed are you with how these guys have been able to perform, while being second and third stringers or being signed out the street 4 days before a game like Deontay Thompson?
Right. We look at it more as these guys are our players. We've got 63 guys, and that's who we prepare to play. coaches do a phenomenal job. Coach Babich, our safeties coach, did a phenomenal job with Trey. Trey put the time in. You know, we erase all labels when you talk about that type of mindset of, are you a backup? No, you're a player. You know, you're a linebacker. No, I'm backup linebacker. No, it doesn't exist. You're a linebacker. You know, in Matt's case, and receiver. You see Andre Holmes, Brandon Tate making big plays yesterday. Backup receiver. No, you're a receiver. And so those guys embrace that. And that's the fun part about it is, you know, when you have that type of approach, that type of mindset, you're able to erase some of those labels that get put on the guys when, you know, TJ or Taiwan. A week before, oh, he's a backup running back. No, he's a running back, and he's a running back for the Buffalo Bills. And so those guys embrace that. They're ready to go, and they step up when their number's called.
Coach, with respect to Tyrod, it just seemed like the Raiders were trying different things to, you know, slow down the effectiveness, completion percentage, all that stuff. They rushed three and forced him to try to beat coverage. Can you just maybe speak to how well he was patient and, you know, just looked for answers? There weren't always giant plays, but it just seemed like he kept things moving.
He did. You know, I really, the last 2 weeks, I've seen Tyrod grow in the pocket and stepping up in the pocket and doing some really nice things, keeping plays alive, certainly. We all know that. Delivering the ball. And I just think that he's had, you know, two quality weeks since the bye. And he's all, you know, you look at other ways that he's evolving and growing as a leader of this football team. That's really exciting to watch. So I've been very proud of what he's done the last 2 weeks, you know, in addition to the rest of the guys that I've talked about already.
Hey, Sean, chemistry-wise, I'm sure you've done it in situations where, you know, it's almost hard to explain when the chemistry is right, but it kind of smacks you upside the head. Can't quite describe it. Are you there with this team? Do you see this team kind of getting to that great area emotionally, mentally together?
I think there's momentum.
I know it's a convoluted question, but
well, I'll try and answer it the best I can. I mean, I think there's momentum there. You know, these guys have taken ownership, and I've said this before. When you bring in guys that have their chin over the bar, talent-wise, you don't need a bunch of Sean McDermott's here talent-wise. But when you have your chin over the bar talent-wise, you can combine that with character. You give yourself a chance to have the culture. And then when you have the culture, you give yourself a chance to have the chemistry that is so important, as you're mentioning, to having a good team, whether you're this tall or this tall. And I think you see that. You saw that on Tate's play yesterday. Right. You see the guys, you know, and I mentioned it earlier, with Deion, you know, having fun on the sideline. These guys are grown men that are enjoying and having fun at what they're doing. You know, I don't want to overlook or not mention the work again that they put in. They put in an extremely high amount of work during the week to earn the right to win.
Sean McDermott, head coach of the Buffalo Bills, addressing the media. Donald and I back to talk about some of that in a couple of minutes. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned? Presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater. The preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. Chris Brown joined us, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com, in the first hour or so of the show. Chris talked about his big takeaway from the Bills' victory over the Raiders yesterday.
I would say that the other thing for me is the collective confidence that this team is now playing with. So it probably covers all three of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Why are the rookies making an impact? They feel prepared. They don't feel like there's any surprises that are going to come their way. They can play fast and let their athletic ability take over. They make an impact. You know, breakout on offense. I think the team is finally, that unit is finally starting to gel. And we talked about this in previous weeks. When you have a new scheme coming in, you have a couple of new pieces, maybe some guys are out due to injury, it takes a little bit longer for all of that to coalesce.
Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com. Mike Jannetty from SpotTrack joined us earlier on this hour. We talked about the Marcell Dareus trade, what it means for Buffalo salary cap, but also what it means for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
They're going to have him for about $5.5 million this year, which is excellent. I mean, that's incredible value. And then next year, for the next 4 years, they're at about $10, $11 million for the cap hit. So, you know, it's a better number for a guy like Dareus, who is, you know, he's a run-stopping guy. He's not going to have tons of pass rush numbers, things like that, in terms of production. So it's a better number. But also, after next year, they can get out of this for free. So this could be a two-year deal for them, you know, minimal dead cap next year. The Bills really took the brunt of that dead cap this year and next year. And Jacksonville's kind of scot-free going forward.
Our Twitter poll today dealt with your big takeaway from the win over the Oakland Raiders yesterday. And most of you thought it was the way that the Bills handled the Oakland Raiders' weapons in that game. And they handled them. The biggest takeaway, 38% of you, 39% say controlling Oakland's offensive weapons. 35% said the impact of the rookies. 22% say the breakout of the offense. 4% said something else. We're going to quickly, Donald, tomorrow have to turn our attention towards the Jets. Are you ready for that?
I think I got to watch some film.
Yeah, we got to watch film tonight.
Got to watch film. So.
All right, we're on the air tomorrow at 12 noon. Trey Wingo from ESPN, one of our guests tomorrow. I want to thank our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store at NapaOnline.com. Entercom Board Op, Ryan Gage. Production assistants, J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, Olivia Merrill, Shelby Rush, our producer Jay Harris. We'll see you tomorrow at noon with the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.